Remember the hallway? No guns.
Right. Those guys have to be alive. Because at the end of the hallway, the retinal scanner needs a match to open the door. Pick a door.
All right, there.
Nope, that's my door.
What's the matter with you? I made a mistake. This is your door.
Oh, no. No backsies. What's the matter? You got a lot of bad guys behind that door?
What's this? You want to learn something?
We live our lives a quarter franchise at a time. Welcome back to Furious Ears Only, the Fast and the Furious first watch slash rewatch podcast, where I am rewatching the movies. I am Zach Brooks, and I am joined by first-time watcher of the Fast and Furious movies, Mac Johnson. Mac, how you doing?
Hi, Zach. I'm good. How are you?
Good. We were talking Fate of the Furious and Hobbs and Shaw tonight, the last two movies released before the most recently released F9 that is in theaters now. How do you feel? You've caught up on all the movies.
I'm caught up. I'm ready to go. Well, I mean, I still got to avoid spoilers for F9, but yeah, I'm caught up on the home video field. So yes. Feels good. Feels like I've accomplished something and I'm now a member of a family.
Yes, that's true. Yes, there is a month ago, you would be able to talk openly about Fast and Furious, but we still have to avoid talking to anybody about the franchise.
Yeah, I saw a few things today that when I was researching stuff for this episode, and
wasn't
happy about, but it's all right. It's okay.
Nothing I saw good. One thing, and or I heard one thing, because it was during a Black Widow podcast. So it wasn't even about this franchise. It was about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And they said something about how that connects Black Widow and F9 together that I wish I wouldn't have heard. But I am very excited to talk to you about it when we both see that movie. And then also you got to see Black Widow, I guess, to understand what we're going to talk about. But it's something that will be very fun for you and I to discuss, I think.
Well, I'm excited.
Yeah. All right. So Fate of the Furious, Hobbs and Shaw. So the eighth official Fast and Furious movie. And then the first, maybe the first of many spinoffs, Hobbs and Shaw.
We've got at least one more coming. Apparently.
Yeah, we're gonna get into those. Yes, I have heard that there is a there's rumblings of Hobbs to Shaw. Do you think it'll be like Jungle to Jungle or Justin to Kelly, Hobbs to Shaw?
I could see it. Yeah, from Hobbs to Shaw. Yeah.
From Hobbs to Shaw. Yes. Hobbs and Shaw and Shaw is what we were saying when we were watching it, because there are multiple Shaws in Hobbs and Shaw.
That's true. Yeah, Hobbs and Shaw, Shaw and Hobbs and. Hobbs and Shaws.
The Hobbs and Shawshank Redemption.
Hobbs and Shaws, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't really know where to start. I guess we start with Fate of the Furious.
Which I got to point out again, on the title card in the movie, it says Fast and Furious 8. None of these movies have titles in the movie that matches what is on like the poster and everything else, right? Like it's billed as Fate of the Furious. You watch the movie and it says Fast and Furious 8.
So you noted that. I actually have seen that. So I've seen this movie twice. I did not notice that at all. So it was just that it shows, like the title card that comes up is for...
The title card that comes up is not what the movie is generally called.
Right.
And it's been like that since the sixth one. So the sixth, seventh, and eighth movies all have different titles. From like, so generally the sixth movie was called Fast and Furious 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the movie itself, it says Furious 6. Now the seventh one is typically called Furious 7. They flipped it this time where in the movie it says Fast and Furious 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then the eighth one said Fate of the Furious everywhere that I had seen before, except in the actual movie, which says Fast and Furious 8.
And it's like Fate of the Furious is like the most notable name of all of these. Like that doesn't have like a combination of Fast and Furious. It just has Fate of the Furious.
Right. Yeah. And it's a pun.
Yeah. What do you think of Fate of the Furious as a title?
I mean, it's appropriate, I think. Like, I mean, maybe not like literally appropriate in terms of like, I guess they all have to do with the fate of the people in them, I guess. But I just, this is so far the silliest of the movies, I feel like, and or at least the most ridiculous. So it deserves a pun title.
Yeah. Right? The first 20 minutes of this movie, we hear the word fate quite a bit.
Yes.
So we hear it from Charlize Theron's character, Cypher. When she meets Dom, she says, you know, must be it. She says, this is fate to him, or maybe he says it to her. And they just say Fate a couple times in that opening.
They're just covering their bases to earn the title, I guess.
Yeah. All right. So what are your broad strokes thoughts on Fate of the Furious? Piece by piece.
It was fine. Like, I mean, it's not my favorite. I feel like it took me a while to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the beginning, like it had some fun stuff happening, but it was, you know, nothing was really grabbing me. I always have trouble when there's a plot of like someone having to do something against their will, like what happens with Dom, right? And they don't try and explain it to any, like seriously, you can't just explain to your family that, like, in some way that you're not acting of your own accord right now. Like, it's all like, it's a trope I feel like it's been in a bunch of movies, and it's always like they're just silent about it. And like, dude, just tell somebody that, like, you're being extorted right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like write it on a note and drop the note when you're in the same room as them.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. He could figure that out.
Yeah. So this was my second time seeing Fate of the Furious, and the first time I saw it, I remember walking out of the theater and being pretty disappointed because I was a big fan of Fast Furious 7, Furious 7. Big fan of Fast 5, 6 I liked in the theater. 8 I actively just like walked out, and I was like, I was bored for a good portion of this movie, and it's hard to be bored during a Fast and the Furious movie.
Right.
The second, this rewatch, I was not really bored watching it. I don't feel bored, but I still didn't really like it that much.
Yeah.
And my biggest problem with it, especially watching it so soon after watching Fast 6, is like this movie is just Fast 6 over again.
Yeah. It's got some similarities for sure.
Like you have Dom in the Letty role in this movie where he's working with the villain, but eventually will switch back to the good side.
Exactly.
You have like this, you know, the ending. I think you can definitely like line up the ending Arctic scene with the never ending runway scene at the end of Fast 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably wrote down some other reasons why they're similar. The one thing that I think is great in this movie, though, is all of the stuff with Shaw. And, you know, we talked in the last podcast about, like, oh, they're setting up Hobbs and Shaw. I don't think in the last one, I think we were a little wrong there. I don't think they're really setting up Hobbs and Shaw in that movie. In this movie, they are definitely setting up Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh, for sure.
They do a great job setting up Hobbs and Shaw in this movie.
So I'm going to mostly agree with that. Mm-hmm. I did really like their kind of, you know, push and pull in this movie, their kind of like budding relationship in a way. The only caveat to that would be like, if you're taking this as a standalone movie, mm-hmm. If you're forgetting the previous movies, I really like the way that they kind of interact with each other, the whole like, you know, kind of growing appreciation they have as the movie goes on. The problem is I still don't buy that, like, his good guy turn essentially from being the guy who killed Han. And I know that, you know, I'm not going to say the hashtag, but
right.
Like I just, in the world of the movie, I don't buy that these guys would be okay with him at any point. Like he would have to do a lot more work. And that's why I say, like, if you just forget about the previous movies, and if you were to say this is the start and mm-hmm. you don't know about that other stuff, all you know is they have like, you know, a past with each other where they were adversaries, then it works. But like just the very specific thing of like he killed their friend.
Right.
And was, I mean, obviously was trying to kill them for a long time in the previous movie, but there's not much of a transition of him going from bad guy to good guy. He's surly, obviously, but he's never really bad in this movie.
Like, no, they make him kind of cartoony in this movie, right?
Yeah.
Like they make him like he's like, and you know, he's in prison. He's served some time. I think this combined with Hobbs and Shaw is what, you know, they kind of repair the character, right? They rehabilitate the character. And especially in Hobbs and Shaw, where then you find out that, you know, he was actually not acting, you know, he didn't actually kill his unit, like, right. he's accused of, and so he was set off on this path to be
yes.
this villain where he was actually innocent this whole time. So and this is something that we talked about early on in the podcast, right, where they rehab everything that the characters do, right? Like, everything Dom Toretto does, there's a reason for it.
Exactly.
So, you know, they do that with Shaw because I think they realize, like, oh, we can't have Statham as the villain.
So my theory that I guess I was wrong, unless something happens in 9, I, like, paused the movie because I'm like, I figured it out. Here's what's – like, I sent – like, after the kind of knowing look between Cypher and Deckard Shaw when, you know, when she and Dom break into the headquarters and we realize, oh, they've got a past together. Of course, we find out it was because of his brother. I thought we were going to find out that Deckard Shaw was under her control as well.
Mm.
That, like, he was in a similar situation to Dom and we just didn't know. And he had been in the previous movie. And that would have, like, helped excuse some of his actions or something, right? And not excuse them, but at least explain them. And
that's some good writing. That might have been a good way to fix this movie a little bit.
Thank you. Because then it would have, like, I don't know. It would have been a nice little twist at the end. It could have, like, I don't know. I'm still waiting to find out that, like, that Han is not dead and he didn't really do it. That's what it's going to take for me to get on the Deckard Shaw full bandwagon. But,
yeah, I have a feeling that might be coming.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, a lot of people, anyone probably listening to this already knows the answer.
Right, yeah. We're the only ones that haven't seen F9 yeah, who are listening yeah. to this podcast. I haven't even watched the trailer, but just from the little bit of rumblings I hear, I feel like that's coming. That's the last piece in the
Deckard Shaw.
But I actually don't know in F9 if, like, I don't think Hobbs is in it.
Is he
I'm pretty
not?
Sure The Rock isn't in it. I don't know if Shaw is in it, though.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
You know, yeah. I would imagine so, but I haven't seen anything either way, to be honest. I know Vin Diesel's in it, and I know a couple other people. But I actually have done a pretty good job, like, with that stuff staying kind of unspoiled.
Yeah, same here. I haven't seen the trailer. I know a few. I do know a few folks, but, like, I've stayed pretty fresh. But yeah, my take on Deckard Shaw, I think at this point is, like, I really do enjoy him as a good guy going forward, like, in both 8 and Hobbs and Shaw. I really like him as being on their team. Mm-hmm. They didn't quite do the legwork to get him there, right?
Right.
So, like, yeah. I like where they ended up, but it's because that's a really tough transition to pull off, and it's hard to do in that short of amount of time too. Where, like, I'm thinking about, like, it's been done really well in TV shows in the past, I think, right? Where you have, like, a lot of time to kind of make that transition. So.
Yeah, I feel like that probably happened in Game of Thrones, as we're talking about. Of course, there are some Game of Thrones connections in this, but I feel like there were probably – I mean, Jaime Lannister was probably a great example.
Jaime Lannister, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then for a while at least, like, Joss Whedon had just kind of a reputation of, like, he always had to do that. It was like if Joss Whedon ever created a villain that was popular, he had to eventually turn him into a hero somehow. Like, that just – it was kind of like he had – it was a compulsion, right? And that does happen, like – to a couple characters in, like, the Buffyverse, where I won't say who they are in case you ever decide to watch it, but, like, anybody who's listening that has seen it knows exactly who I'm talking about, where, like, there is a shift from a villain to a hero and it takes multiple seasons. And it, like, I remember before I watched the show, I knew it was going to happen. Like, I just knew from pop culture references that this person becomes a hero eventually, and I was pissed off about it preemptively because, like, in the early,
is that like Angel, like, villain, does Angel start? I mean, I know Angel, you don't have to say that, but I know Angel's a spinoff from Buffy.
Angel starts good and things happen, but, like, it's not who I'm thinking of. Okay. But there's a character that I knew was going to go turn good, and I just remember in the early episodes being upset at that idea because I knew it was going to happen. Like, there's no way this will work. Like, this person's totally evil. And it happens over a long period of time. And it's not just, like, done in a way where it's not just like, oh, they gradually started writing the character as being softer until they were suddenly good. It was like there are actual things that happen, like landmarks and decisions that the character makes throughout the story that, like, change who they are.
Yeah.
And you can do it in a long form story like that, right? And I don't know what they could have done to turn Deckard Shaw into like a full good guy with, you know, basically at the beginning of the next movie as they did, but like, I don't know. It's
you talked about Joss Whedon. Another example, and very timely one, is Loki as well, right? Sure. Loki's the villain in Avengers, and even before the Loki show started, by the end of Infinity, or by the beginning of Infinity War, Loki's, you're sad about Loki.
And even in the first Avengers, like he's very much the bad guy of that movie, but he's so fun and likable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's trying to destroy the Earth, but he's a likable guy. And that's how you knew that, like, you know, obviously Joss Whedon didn't carry on making Loki stories. He made another Avengers movie, but not with him. But you knew that, like, oh, that's the path they're going to set that character on.
Yeah. Do you think sometimes what that happens, because we get this also with Hobbs, right? Like, I mean, Dwayne Johnson isn't the villain, but he's the antagonist in Fast Five.
Yes.
And over the next couple movies, he becomes, you know, they're working together, and it takes a couple more movies for, or at least like half a movie, for them to really start working together. But do you think it's just that they write these movies, you know, they write Fast Five and they don't expect how good the character is going to be, and they're like, oh, we can't have this guy as a villain, we got to make
him a little better. I mean, I think they know maybe that might happen. It's because I think that's a little bit of a different trope of, like, there's the kind of Hitchcock trope of the wrongly accused man on the run who's got to, like, clear his name, evade the authorities, and catch the real villain all at the same time, right? And he's always being chased by a lawman who's also a good guy but is also an antagonist, right? So, like, he's like the by the book guy who, you know, this is Tommy Lee Jones, obviously, in The Fugitive. You've got it in, like, the first
mission. Well, I mean, we talked about that Hobbs is, you know, got that Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones was rumored. Was that what we said?
Allegedly, that's who they wanted before The Rock. But very different Hobbs and Shaw movie. But that type of character. I don't know if I've ever seen one where they continue to make the movies and that person, they become friends afterwards. But, like, usually by the end of that first movie, there's that kind of begrudging alliance, right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, you've got, spoiler alert, Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford, you know, having a truce at the end of The Fugitive, and, like, plenty of other Mission Impossible. The first Mission Impossible is that way. Like, and those are all kind of taking off of that old, you know, to me, I always think of Hitchcock because of, like, North by Northwest and The 39 Steps and Sabotage and all, or Saboteur and all these.
I haven't seen Saboteur. I've seen the other ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they're all in that same, you know, kind of lineage. But, you know, they did make a Fugitive sequel, but of course, no Harrison Ford, so you didn't get to see
U.S. Marshals.
Yeah, U.S. Marshals, which is
the Fugitive. For Fugitive Years Only can be the next that'll be our next project.
Hey, if you want me to go on a quick Fugitive tangent real quick, the first movie is awesome. The second movie, why, like, they did, like, the old, I guess, I think, like, 80s and before, this was a more common thing where you just remake the first movie as the sequel, right? Like, you don't do anything. You just literally remake it, which is another wrongfully accused guy he's chasing. Like, if you're going to switch the focus to being about Tommy Lee Jones, how about actually let him chase the actual bad guy this time and do something different than the first movie?
Is the second movie he's chasing Wesley Snipes?
It is. But Wesley Snipes, again, is, you know, a good guy who has been set up in, you know, a very similar situation. There's a plane crash instead of a bus crash. Like, it's, or was it? Yeah, it was a bus, right? Yeah, that's right. In the first one that gets hit by a train.
Right. At the end of Fast and Furious.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, but, like, give him an actual bad guy to go after this time. Just change it up. You know, you could have had a series going then if you kept doing that. But
yeah, well, I mean, you know, we do have to figure out what our next project is. We've done Bond. We've done all the Fast and Furious movies. We've got F9 still. Maybe we do For Snipes Ears Only, and we just do a bunch of 90s Wesley Snipes movies.
There you go.
Murder 1600. Yeah, Passenger 57. What's the Just Blade. Cause. And
Blade was the 90s.
Yeah, Art of War. I mean, Wesley Snipes is in a lot of movies. Kind of surprised he's not in the Fast and Furious franchise, to be honest.
Well, they put him in Expendables, didn't they?
Oh, I think they did.
Wasn't he in Expendables? That's what I was thinking about when, like, at one point during Hobbs and Shaw, I was like, this is like becoming like Expendables level, like, silliness in a way.
We'll get there. But yes, okay. So the question I want to ask you, so, you know, we've had some rehabbing of some villains. Of course, at the end of Fate of the Furious, Cypher gets away. We don't know if Cypher will show up in F9 or not. Do you think that this franchise will try to do the same rehab? Because they have Charlize Theron as Cypher, with her dreads. Do you think they will try to rehab her and make her eventually one of the good guys as well?
I don't think so. Because I don't know. Like, I don't see them going back to that well, for one. I mean, maybe they do. But she's like, she's not just like, Jason Statham was like fun evil.
Mm-hmm.
They've got her as being like, you know, mustache twirling evil, where like she's just like, hey, I'm gonna kill your baby, man. I'm gonna kill your baby here. Like, we had to pause it. Sarah's like, is that really where this franchise is gone now? Is they're like threatening babies like on screen? But I do look forward to the eventual Vin Diesel and Tormund Grimsbane team up of Dom and Connor when they become friends. Spinoff.
Doesn't he kill Tormund in this movie?
He does, but I have a feeling he'll just come back, and they're gonna learn to, they'll, you know, forget that he killed Elsa, and they're gonna put aside their differences and gonna have to save the world, you know.
I do love that his name is Rhodes. For many reasons, but mostly because it gives us the line in this movie, Rhodes has the codes. I love that so much.
I mean, yeah, they did. You think they could have had more road puns in there.
So, right, like, where we're going, we don't need roads.
They could try. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Right as he kills him.
Right.
Like, just out of a plane, as he says it.
This movie came out in 2017. I mean, this is, you know, we have two Game of Thrones actors in this movie. We have Natalie Emanuel and Christopher Hivju, I think.
Not gonna try.
Nope. Both in Game of Thrones. I on my other podcast, we did Edge of Tomorrow, which came out in 2014, a couple years before this. I noted how, like, the creature effects in that just look exactly like the Game of Thrones dragons. Like, it just is so clearly like the same effects house that did that. Another action movie that's just like highly influenced by the Game of Thrones being the most popular show on TV.
Oh yeah, well, at the point when they're like in Moscow looking down, like, Sarah's like, oh, they're at the wall. They're looking off the wall.
Right, we end in like a very snowy environment, right?
Yeah.
John Snowy. We even have the death of Rhodes in, you know, Beyond the Wall, basically.
Yeah.
Very Tormundy.
Yeah.
We don't really get the Game of Thronesization in Hobbs and Shaw. That's more like the Deadpoolization, I feel like, of it's very Deadpool influenced to me.
Yeah, sure.
Which I know you're a big fan.
I'm not an anti-fan. I just didn't really. I saw the first one and it was fine. You know.
No, I thought you were like. I thought you were like a big anti-Deadpool person.
I'm not anti. It's just I did like it wasn't to my taste.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was entertaining as I watched it, but like, I don't know. I'm fine not seeing the second one, I guess. Although it does have Rob Delaney in it. I love Rob Delaney.
Rob Delaney is great. Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, as we're talking about Game of Thrones, jumping ahead to Hobbs and Shaw, they talk about Game of Thrones and Hobbs and Shaw. They talk about the finale of Game of Thrones and Hobbs.
That's
and Shaw.
Right.
They spoil the finale of Game of Thrones and Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw this in the theater. This movie came out like 2 months after Game of Thrones ended. Like, it was very, very quick after. Like, they filmed that way after, and it's pretty amazing that they were able to like put that in there, and that there wasn't a bunch of outrage that they spoiled Game of Thrones for people.
Well, I also feel like if you're going to like spoil the ending of any show soon after, Game of Thrones was fair game because everybody was watching it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there weren't that many people who didn't catch up before the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like, you know, I don't know.
So Game of, So the release date was July 13th, at least the like premiere release date for Hobbs and Shaw, and Game of Thrones ended in May. So it really was like, I mean, they must have filmed that scene immediately after
Game of Thrones. It was the post credits, right? So like,
yes,
so
they just
added in. Right. Right.
And a lot of one of the things I definitely noticed on Hobbs and Shaw is like there's so many scenes where you're like, oh, these actors are not at all in the same place. They're just like, hey, let's film this side of the phone conversation and this side of the phone conversation and stitch them together. Especially all the stuff with Ryan Reynolds in that movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Who like? I mean, are we jumping this far ahead? I don't know.
I mean, but might as well. We're not on any kind of format.
I wasn't expecting them to go like full Blofeld style with this Etienne villain that we weren't going to find out who. I figured by the end of the movie we were going to find out who that robot voice was, and there's points when, you know, like the robotiness of it is cracking and you're starting to hear a little bit of a real voice, and it kept sounding like Ryan Reynolds to me, so I was expecting him to show up. Like, I think I texted you, I'm like, this robot sounds awfully Canadian to me.
I didn't even pick up that was what you meant by that.
Yeah, and I was assuming that we were going to find out it was him later, and of course we didn't. So, I mean, I'm not still banking on it being him, but like, yeah, I think it's got to be someone else at this point, because there's the reference to like, oh, do you remember me or something, right?
I think it'll be somebody else. I don't think it's because Ryan Reynolds, what we see of the post-credit scene that he's, you know, fighting with these people, like, it wouldn't really make any sense. I mean, there's been twists in this franchise that haven't made any sense, but
I thought it was him previously, aside from the Canadian-ness sounding of the part of the accent, was just that typically when you have that type of secret person as the villain, it means secret because it's someone we've already been introduced to and it's going to be a twist, right? Like, otherwise show who it was. So to me, I'm thinking, okay, who are characters we saw earlier in the movie who you don't expect to be bad? But the fact that they've kind of taken that off the table and it could be anybody from a past movie now, like,
I feel like it's just gonna be some random person. I don't think it's gonna, like, who, I don't know who it could be.
It's right? gotta be someone we've already seen, right? I think so. Like, otherwise why would you disguise who, like, their voice? It's gotta be a
just because it's poorly written, I think. I don't know. I can't think of who we could have possibly met. Is it Jesse? Like, who could it possibly be?
Jesse would be great.
Yeah. Like, it has to be somebody post 5, right? Yeah, I guess it could be Eva Mendes. Like, that's the only person, really, who's, like, a big name that we haven't seen.
True. Yeah. And they say something about, like, you know, remembering me or what happened between it or something, like, there, I can't remember what it was. And then also we get a little hint that when Shaw was approached by Etienne to join them, that was what they said 7 or 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So at the least it's someone who's been off the map for that long. So it can't be anybody who was introduced, you would think, or has been around since then. Maybe not. But yeah.
I have a feeling it's just going to end up being some like random, like, it, you know, maybe it'll be somebody like, oh, I've been in the background this whole time. But I just don't think it's anybody who we've actually like.
All your pain.
Yeah. I will say it did stick out to me that Luke Shaw is nowhere to be found in Hobbs and Shaw.
Owen Shaw.
Right. Luke Hobbs. Yeah. Luke Shaw is, I think that's a soccer player who just scored a goal in that England game the other day. Owen Shaw nowhere to be found in Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah but we have a different Shaw. We have Hattie Shaw instead.
His sister is in trouble, his brother is in trouble, his mom is sort of involved, and he's just like, they don't even mention him. It's like he doesn't even exist.
They mention him. They talk about like they mentioned something about I think when Deckard Shaw had to go bad or whatever, like it was like, you know, he had to help him.
That he also was manipulated as well.
Yes. Is he in the flashbacks when they show them as kids? Like there's three of them, right? They show like,
it's just Deckard and Hattie.
Who I think I mentioned this to you as I was watching it, but like the age difference was so funny to me because like, he's literally like Jason Statham is literally like 20 years older than Vanessa Kirby, and they're supposed to be this like siblings, which obviously you could be siblings and be that far apart, but you're not going to be growing up together.
So Jason Statham is 53 years old. Young.
Yeah.
They're literally 20 years apart.
Yeah. So like, is he playing young or is she playing old or is it somewhere in between?
I think they're both playing. He's playing a little bit younger. She's playing a little bit older.
Yeah.
All right, let's pop back to Fate of the Furious. We kind of hopped off that. So we start in the Cuban race, and this is like very silly, and like the effects aren't great, but I don't know. There's something about this that I really like. Like Dom, you know, making the beater into a car that could win this race.
That was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Uses the pop tab. We get the explosive finish.
Soda tab. Yeah.
Yeah, I did think the race before the explosive finish, I did write down, I was sort of like, I thought it was kind of boring until that point, but then the ending is good.
Well, that's actually kind of a issue I have with this movie and Hobbs and Shaw in general, is that like there's some really, I feel like there's cool things happening and there's like fun stuff happening in the action sequences, but I've gotten to the point where I'm not really involved like in the sequences anymore. Like I'm watching them and I'm like, but I'm not like, you know, there's a different level of when you're like, you feel invested in the scene, right? Mm-hmm. And at this point I'm just kind of watching, admiring the silliness, you know,
right? Well, like the other side of that was like Fast 7, right? Or Furious 7, when the bus is going over the cliff, right? And that's like edge of your seat, you're like very excited for that. And this,
I didn't feel that at all in really in either of these. Even when cool stuff was happening, I just like, I was just kind of like, yeah, that's fun.
I had that a little bit more in Hobbs and Shaw. I think there were some pretty interesting action scenes in that.
Maybe earlier, but I don't know. I never felt the stakes were real because it always seemed like the universe has gotten so over the top that it doesn't feel grounded in a way that like I have something to latch onto, right? Or like that I feel that like there's really any danger for anybody. Like when they're like falling out of buildings and crashing onto cars and like everyone's always fine. Mm-hmm. Like I never feel like there's stakes really.
There were stakes for Elena. All right. She had stakes.
She got fridged though. She got fridged.
Oh, that's true. She did. I'm going to have you define fridging when we get there because that's
okay.
Yeah, that's a popular term. I think people use fridging and don't always know what it means. But before we get there, yes, of course, we have Dom meeting Cypher, and says must be casual Friday. I think that's what she says to him. I wrote down all these quotes, but I didn't attribute the quotes. We get Fate said a lot. Then we hop over to anything else in Cuba before we hop to Sacadad.
When we got the establishing shot, there was like a little kind of like, you know, like fort looking thing off in the water that reminded me of the clinic in Die Another Day. That's all. That's it. But
oh, interesting.
The one that they go to and like Jinx dives off the edge, you know, it looked a lot like that.
Okay. Yep. I can
long connection.
Did that remind you more of Die Another Day than the end of this movie, which takes place in the snow?
They both ends of this movie reminded me a lot of Die Another Day.
Okay. That's interesting. I think the next movie, there were some things that reminded me of some of the newer James Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
As we get there. So then we
definitely one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we see Hobbs. He's now a soccer dad.
Yes.
He has to run one more job, but for whatever reason, if he can't complete this job successfully, he will go to prison. Doesn't make any sense.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. High stakes. I don't know if I would take a job that if you failed your job, you'd go to prison for it. You're not breaking any laws.
Yeah.
So they're going to do the Berlin job, not the Italian job. That will be referenced later.
It does be referenced in both movies.
Oh, in both? I did not notice
in this movie.
All right.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, this reminds me a lot of the beginning of Avengers Age of Ultron, right? We have everybody coming together. We're seeing them kind of performing. And we see the wrecking ball coming through. This is where, you know, you could feel the intensity of this scene. This one, like that wrecking ball hitting the cars, they're straight up murdering some people.
Yes, they are killing a lot of people. in this movie, kind of throughout it too. At the in the climax, also, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. I know they keep saying they're like, "Oh, it's okay. They're separatists." I'm like, "All right, still killing a lot of them." But
yeah. Separatists, I feel like they just name characters separatists in different franchises, and they say, "Oh yeah, we don't like the separatists."
Oh yeah, it's separatists. They want to be separate, man. They don't. They're not in with the family.
Yeah. So yes, we. I think those were just cops, though. I think those were just like German cops that get wrecked.
Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. We're getting good Roman right away. Roman's just delivering the zingers.
Roman is, yeah, is being Roman. And I got to say also, like, reflecting back now on one of the only things I knew about this era of the franchise previously was just I remember the social media meltdown that Tyrese had about the development of Hobbs and Shaw, because he was not happy that they were doing a spinoff instead of going straight to F9. Mm-hmm. And he wanted, like, you know, he didn't think that's what the fans wanted. They want him. They want the family. Like, thinking back at all, like, that's a very Roman reaction he's having. Like,
yeah. I think he definitely blends reality and his character.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get an EMP device from Berlin. That's this one. Yeah. So, but in the process, Dom, he has been infiltrated. He goes rogue, and he hits his car into Hobbs's car.
Yeah.
And takes the device.
They have a little conversation. They're literally having a conversation about it, and Dom doesn't just say, like, "Look, man, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Help me. Like, I got to do this now. Let everyone know this isn't me. Help me out." Like, or just, I mean,
give
I guess
a wink.
Listening, but like, I don't know, something he could have done. Like, yeah, like the heavy wink, you know? I don't know. It's that part to me was just like, come on. It feels contrived. It feels like they wrote it that way because it had to be that way, you know?
That EMP device, that is MacGuffin number one of this movie. That is not the only MacGuffin, but is a MacGuffin that we have in this movie. He could have given a wank or something. Letty, I just worked on Letty's and has some annoying anger and says, "What are you going to do? Email her?" I think that's when they get back to the hideout, I believe.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. Letty just, maybe she's better in F9. I don't know. But I'm still not on the Letty train yet.
She's not getting your MVP this time.
No, never. Hobbs failed, so he's going to prison.
Yeah.
And we see Mr. Nobody once again, and he's joined by the new guy, a little bland white guy joining the franchise. Nobody. Yeah, that is Training Wheels himself, Scott Eastwood.
Yeah, every time, like Sarah said about 10 times we were watching, it's like, they better not be like making him the new Brian. Like, yeah.
I mean, I think that's kind of what they're doing.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate.
He's not good.
But
I don't know if he's back for F9.
I don't, and I'm not going to say he's bad, but he's just like.
No, he's bad. I will say he's bad.
Okay.
He can listen to this podcast. He's worse than Lucas Black.
Oh, wow. I'm not going that far.
Oh, he's. I'm not. It's like, he's not like bad enough to be bad. He's just like shitty.
He's just kind of. There's no reason for him to be there.
Imagine your dad being Clint Eastwood. This, like, I just watched a whole bunch of Clint Eastwood Western movies. Yeah. And yeah, Clint Eastwood, you know, maybe not the best person in real life, but like a great action star. And you're his son, and you're just like cardboard, like matzah.
Well, that's not everybody has that, right? Like, because Clint Eastwood has, you know, he's like one of the greatest screen presences ever, right? Like, he just like, he is like, he's a magnetic actor, right?
Right.
And Scott Eastwood, maybe not as much, but
Mr. Eastwood, Eastwood.
Everybody everywhere is going to be saying Clint Eastwood's the biggest yellow belly in the West.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like when your kids are going to grow up and be graphic designers one day, and it's just like, no, I don't know.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope my dad listens to this, and he's like, "Yes, Zach, yes."
No, your kids. I'm not talking about your dad. I'm talking about your kids.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the embarrassment of your kids becoming graphic designers.
No, I mean, your kids are someday going to grow up and be graphic designers, and they're just going to make Photoshops. And
it's they'll not be as good.
Oh, I can see the like color palette doesn't really match between these two lines. That's what I mean. I'm making fun of your kids. Your kids,
Mark. Yeah. Kids. Something's got to be done about the Photoshop skills of your kids.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I get it now. We're on the same page.
All right. Well, anyways, we'll move on. Hobbs gets put into prison. We're getting our setup for Hobbs and Shaw here. Mm-hmm. They are in the cell. This big prison just happens that they are in the cell right across
from each other. What happened to I guess Mr. Nobody pulled some strings to make this happen because this is what he wanted. But like, I remember thinking, like, what happened to his Magneto jail that he was in, where it's like it's impenetrable and no one can get to him, and now he's suddenly in like Gen Pop. Like,
yeah.
But I guess that's a Mr. Nobody orchestration.
I think this is supposed to be the Magneto jail. Like, no, because he says better get to digging.
I know it's like a high like whatever. High security. Right. But it's not like it's not where they had him at the end of the last movie,
mm-hmm.
which was no. like,
yeah, he was just in like a, I think it's just that he's been there a while. He's like earned his way out of like a good behavior. Yeah. Good behavior. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. He works in the library and he like helps out in the cafeteria, mm-hmm. and now he can,
exactly.
He can be with the other guys.
Everybody's a little bit older. It's been a few years. Yeah. You can tell by the age of Hobbs's daughter, right? Where she's a little bit older.
Let's get into that for a second. We got the age of Hobbs's daughter. We had Brian's kids getting seemingly much older in F7, right?
Right.
But before that happened, Dom has a secret baby who in this movie is still like a 6 month old.
Still baby. Her
kids have grown up. Yeah. Brian's kids are probably driving by now. And Dom's secret baby in the same period of time is 6 months old.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Maybe Dom's baby is going to be. How old do you think Dom's baby is going to be in F9? This will be 4 years later. Well, 3 years later when I was supposed to come out.
I hope they're going to go the Rocky format, which is where each movie picks up exactly where the last one left off, but the kid is 5 years older somehow.
Yeah. That'll be good. I feel like they need to accelerate the timeline because they need to be able to age everybody up. So in, you know, by F10, F11, then the family is really like Shaw's daughter, Dom's son, and Brian's son.
Just hand it off to the family.
Yeah. Like a Young Avengers, like Young Avengers type thing.
So they're going to have to find some better kids then, because we got, so far we got Scott Eastwood as a younger generation. and that's,
yeah, so he's going to be like the Mr. Nobody. Maybe he'll be better with age. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting that they wouldn't, if you're going to get the son of a famous tough guy actor, why aren't you getting Wyatt Russell?
I was gonna say, if you're gonna have Kurt Russell, why not have Wyatt Russell too? Yeah.
He's hilarious. He's a gifted comic actor. Like, you know.
And you could continue on the family thing, right? Where you say this is Mr. Sure. Nobody Jr. Yeah, that's a.
Do you think maybe they went to him? Maybe they went to him and it didn't work out. So they're like, okay, Scott Eastwood it is.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. 2017. So this movie was made in 2016. I don't know what. Wyatt Russell was doing then. Not yet in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Everybody wants some that already come out.
Yeah.
Everybody wants some to come out. 22 Jump Street had come out.
Oh, he's in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's a missed opportunity. Maybe he shows up. Maybe I could see, you know, Junior Nobody or something.
He's a really good hockey player. That could have helped out on the ice at the end.
All right, so we get Hobbs and Shaw. They're yelling at each other through the cells, all show and no go. There's some funny stuff, like the Rock lifting the table was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Hobbs lifting the table. But I just feel like they're kind of like wrestling promos back and forth to each other in this movie are not – like it's nowhere close to as good as the wrestling promos back and forth that we get in Hobbs and Shaw.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Because, like, Hobbs was like, I will beat your ass like a Cherokee drum. Like,
it's, yeah. Yeah, that was a little bit strained, that line, I felt like. But also, like, that was the exact same thought I had, was, like, this feels like I'm watching a professional wrestling. Like, this is, like, we've gone, like, full WWE at this point. Yeah.
Having watched The Rock in WWF, especially in Hobbs and Shaw, like, what we see in that is that was the, like, really good promos that The Rock would cut, which is why he became a big star. You know, just the you could tell there's stuff that's just improvised and they're back and forth. And Jason Statham does the same thing where they go back and forth. And it's, I think, especially like the stuff on the plane, which that scene is just really, I love that scene in Hobbs and Shaw. Like, that is just like a top notch wrestling promo back and forth.
Okay. I was never like big into wrestling, though I did go to one wrestling event in high school when my friend had an extra ticket because his other friend bailed. So I did go to see one wrestling event, and it was The Rock fighting Stone Cold Steve Austin. So I have seen The Rock in person doing his thing. And it was, I'll admit, like, when you're there and you're in the atmosphere, it was very fun.
Oh, they're super fun to go to live.
Yeah.
They
really are. I was in the nosebleeds, but it was a good time.
Yeah, we get some more wrestlers in Hobbs and Shaw. I don't know in this movie if we get any other wrestlers besides The Rock, or even any UFC fighters. I don't think so off the top of my head. They're more into the Game of Thrones actors in this one. So
true.
So
which I gotta say, like, so Tormund,
mm-hmm.
who what's his name? Wait, it's Rhodes.
Christopher. Yeah, Rhodes. Yeah, he plays Rhodes.
I just like that, like, when you're watching Game of Thrones, you have kind of this idea that, like, oh, this actor doesn't look like this in real life. They're being made up for this character on Game of Thrones because this is a fantasy series, et cetera, et cetera. Like that, you know, like, you know, Jon Snow doesn't always have long hair and a scraggly beard and a cloak and all this. But, like, this guy, that's just how he looks. Like, he's, and everything else I've seen him in now, it's like, that's just him. He just looks like he belongs in Game of Thrones.
I mean, if he ever shaved that beard, though, he could be in all kinds of stuff you wouldn't even know it's him, to be fair.
Well, I think you would see those crazy eyes, because his eyes are always wide open, right?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Like, you would probably not realize it was him, but you would feel like that guy is vaguely familiar.
Mm-hmm. So, we got our big prison break. And, you know, again, like, the whole time we've got, this is kind of similar to the two hallway scene that we play at the beginning of this, where they're like going parallel with each other, and they're each, Hobbs and Shaw are each doing their own thing. Like, this movie is really doing a lot of legwork to set up the spinoff, which I believe came out just 1 year later. Fate of the Furious 2017. Oh, 2 years later.
Hobbs and
Shaw was 2019. Okay. But, well into development at this point, I would imagine.
Yeah. I think they announced it after the fact, but they, you know, they probably already had it in mind, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, and I just worked on, like, Shaw, they're really doing a lot to make Shaw very cartoony and make Hobbs, like, very much like a superhero.
Oh, for sure. Like, there's the shot which was very kind of like Indiana Jones, in the prison break, where you see the Rock, Hobbs is standing there, and he's confronted suddenly by, like, several guys. I can't remember how many, but it's a few. And then it cuts to the hallway that was, like, directly behind those guys, and you just see them all flying into the wall, where he's hit all of them at once. So you don't see the hit, you just see the aftermath, which to me felt very Spielberg-y or very Indiana Jonesy. And it's just like, how did he hit all those guys at once? It's funny, and I like it. I'm just like, they really are making him, like, superhuman at this point.
Yeah, he's just a superhero. Then we get our everybody's together. There's the attack by Cypher. We get the Dom kiss, which was like the trailer shot for this movie. God, Dom is kissing Charlize Theron Cypher character. So
gasp.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's not the Dom I knew. That's what that's what Letty says. They can't call in Brian, though. Do you like that they mention Brian? Like, they keep the continuity, even though the actors.
Yeah, you got to mention him, I think. And it's like a little tribute to him. And otherwise, you'd be thinking, like, hey, where's Brian?
Why don't they call an Iron Man? Why don't they just call the Avengers?
Exactly, right? Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, you get a little bit of that in The Dark Knight Rises, too, where you're like, man, where's the Joker when all this is happening? But in that instance, I know Chris Nolan had said, like, we're just going to leave that behind. You know, we're not going to, like, touch that. But yeah, it's one of those things where if they didn't put it in, you would be wondering about it. And so I think it works.
Yeah,
I think it works.
All right. So then we get our big reveal. The reason why Dom is working with Cypher is because she's kidnapped Elena, kidnapped his child. Earlier in the movie, we did get Dom talking to Letty about being a father and how it's a, you know, that, his thoughts on being a father. So they set this up earlier in the movie. And this is why Dom agrees to work with Cypher. Motivation wise, does this work?
I mean, it's fairly ham-fisted, I feel like. It's not, I mean, obviously it works with it, like, yeah, if you're gonna try and give him something where he's gonna, like, go against his family, then this would be it. But it's, I don't know, it seems a little cheap in a way. I don't know, what did you think it was gonna be when you first saw it? Do you remember, like, because obviously we knew that she's got something on him, she showed him something. Did you have a theory of what it would be?
I'm trying to think if I feel like I was kind of like, I might have seen this coming at the time. It's very hard to remember, but I feel like just so much of this is, like, so set up of, like, fatherhood and family. Yeah. And they, like, have that, like, very on-the-nose conversation at the beginning of the movie. So you know that there's a child coming. I think I was surprised that there was a baby. And at first, I think I thought it was just Elena.
Yeah. I remember at first I thought maybe they had Mia, but that wouldn't really make sense either, because if they had taken Mia, there'd be, like, then you wouldn't be able to stop Brian from coming back into the story, which obviously he can't. So that wouldn't have made sense. And then I remembered just from the opening credits, seeing that Elena was going to be in the movie, and then realizing, oh, she hasn't showed up yet. That must be who it is. It's, I think it was right before we found out is when I kind of figured that out.
But you're right. Yeah. The age of, it's a baby, right? And this is, like, theoretically taking place a few years. I mean, Shaw has been in prison for, like, long enough that he can be on good behavior, so this must be a little while after.
It's because it's like, when was the last time that could have happened, right? So, like, when, so it was the beginning of Fast Six that he leaves Elena, right? That Dom leaves Elena.
Yeah, she's not in Furious Seven at all.
And that's because that's when he finds out about Letty, is
the
opening scenes of Six. So this baby was, like, you know, gestated and then, you know, born and then grew to what, maybe 6 months, hard to say, in the time that Seven happens, which, like, I could buy that. It's just we see the, I feel like we see other kids getting older the same amount of time in an unrealistic way, you know?
And, like technology advancing, like, right, we have, I mean, I guess, the thing is, though, we're talking about time, and then you got to remember Tokyo Drift at the same time they have flip phones. I guess that's just, don't think too hard about it, basically.
Don't think too hard about it. It's a Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah. Don't take notes on this movie. It's, and what I'm finding is some of these movies, it's like, oh, they're great, until you're, like, sitting there taking notes on them, and you're like, oh, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense when you try to talk about it.
Yeah, it's, it, I don't know. To me, like, there's the fact that it's, like, I don't know, I guess the fact that it's a new character you're finding out about just strikes me as a little contrived for rationale for getting him. Like, if they had found something that was, like, already existing in the franchise that they could have turned against him in some way.
Like the voice in Hobbs and Shaw.
There you go.
What if Dom Toretto is the voice in Hobbs and Shaw?
Whoa, that would be.
I think that's the only twist that could be, like earth-shaking enough. But they wouldn't introduce that in a spinoff, so
that's
not going to happen.
But just the idea of adding, like, it's just one of those things, like, okay, the writer can add whatever they want and make it, like, you know. And also, this is just a pet peeve of mine. I feel like that it doesn't necessarily reflect on the movie itself, but just the idea of, like, I'm going to hurt your loved one, to me, doesn't always work as it always strikes me as cheesy in movies in a way. Like, that's, I remember, cheap. And it bothered me. And it's a scene I think a lot of people really love in Mission Impossible 3, which is, Philip Seymour Hoffman saying like to Tom Cruise, like, I'm going to hurt your girlfriend is his whole thing. Like, I'm going to find your girlfriend and hurt her, which I don't know. It just seems like cheap writing to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to explain it, but yeah, it doesn't right. really.
I feel like, and that's the thing, especially with this movie, is that like the only motivations there are for characters is like family members. And I know that's the whole thing with Fast and Furious is like, oh, you know, my sister is in trouble, or, you know, my wife is in trouble, or this like child I didn't even know about until 10 minutes ago. But it's just like they don't like there's not much legwork to find an actual reason. Like they could figure out some reason that Dom is working for them. Right.
Yeah.
That could be like a little bit more interesting. And instead, it's just like, oh, you have this like soap opera secret baby.
It is. It's very soap opera. And then it's also like it's the double whammy cheap motivation of introducing the kid as the leverage and then killing Elena as motivation for later. Yeah. Right. So like,
fridging. So talk about fridging. So we kill.
Yeah.
Do we kill Elena at this point, or is she, I guess she's still alive. Right.
And she's alive at this point. They kill her later. But yeah, just the it's a term that refers to kind of like eliminating a female character in order to motivate the male character to defeat the villain, right? And it's it's not always like, you know, it only counts as fridging when it's done in a cheap way. Like there are ways to do that really well and that work within the story, but when it seems like a matter of convenience in this case, right? Because it kills two birds with one stone, which A, it gives like in the classical sense of the term fridging, like it gives Dom the that motivation of like the extra hatred for the climax of the movie, and B, it gets Elena out of the series, right? Because at this point she's a complication, you know, because they didn't, you know, we had them as a couple, but then Letty comes back. So now that Letty's back, she's taken a step back, and this was their way of writing her character out. And they did a similar thing in Mission Impossible Fallout, right? Where like they had this character of Michelle Monaghan who was going to be fridged in Ghost Protocol. And that like up until like towards the end or middle of filming, that was what she was going to be killed. And I don't know if you remember in the movie, like that's part of the plot is that she's been killed.
Right.
And it's only at the end that you find out, oh, she wasn't really killed. That's a cover story to keep her safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was added later. Cause originally she got killed. That was the plot. And they realized that was cheap. And so they didn't do it, but then they still had her character floating in the background of the series right after that, because like in the next movie, she's not there. But everybody's asking, you know, Tom Cruise and asking Christopher McQuarrie, like, hey, what happened to Julia? How come she's not around anymore? We saw she was alive. Mm-hmm. And they thought they had written her out by having her have her own life. But they realized, no, we need to do a little bit more to, like, exit her from the series, which is why she shows up in Fallout. And they, like, let her, like, you know, be a part of the action at the end. But also you realize, okay, she's got her own other life now. She's got a new husband. She can move on. She's gone now. And they, like... So I thought it was a really kind of like elegant way for them to finish her story in that series.
Yeah.
Rather than just like, you know, shooting her. Like it's a better way to do it. And so I don't know. I didn't really like the way they got rid of Elena here. They could have figured out some better way for her to bow out.
I think what's also weird about the way that they, and I know we're kind of jumping ahead because they haven't actually killed her at this point, but they kill her behind glass. Like there's a separation between her and Dom that they're not like quite face to face. So it doesn't have the emotional impact that it could have. Also, I never felt like, I mean, as soon as Letty came back, Dom was just kind of like, yeah, okay, like we're done. Letty's back. Right. And I guess the child is what adds that emotional weight, but.
Yeah,
it's just kind of cheap.
So. Yeah, agreed.
There's no reason. I guess the reason why I couldn't have been a 4-year-old is because they need the Shaw saving him scene at the end, which is great. I'm glad they have that.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'm gonna speed things up a little bit on this one because we're taking forever on this movie, and the better movie is around the corner, in my opinion. We get the fish truck taking them to New York. They have this the toy shop, they call it, where every vehicle that has been seized from drug dealers on the East Coast. I wish they would have brought back the cars from Too Fast, Too Furious at this point. They could have shown some of the cars from that, because they're having all the drug dealer cars on the East Coast. Yeah.
Easter eggs, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, we do get lots of Easter eggs in this movie. We have, and we even have Tej saying, and this is the first we've even mentioned Tej, but Tej says, we got a tank. Guys, we got a tank. So calling back to that.
Yep. Like that. Yeah. We got more big fans, too. I feel like everywhere Mr. Nobody works, there's giant fans spinning in the background.
Oh, like a brewery, like those giant brewery fans.
Yeah, I feel like it's just a good, like, production design-wise, it's just a cool way to show scale when you've got, like, room is like you put something big and moving on the back wall to show how big it is. But wherever he is, big fans follow.
I'll have to take a look for all the big Mr. Nobody fans.
There you go.
He stands. So, yes, we have Dom meeting with who we don't know yet, but it will turn out to be Mrs. Shaw, Mother Shaw.
Yeah,
Helen Mirren. What do you think, Helen Mirren joining the franchise? Did you know this was coming?
Did you know she was coming? Okay. I did. I remember that being a big deal. And it was fun. Like, I mean, I think, I don't know about you. We immediately figured out who she was. She's doing that same accent. Like, I don't know if it's Cockney, but you know, it's that kind of working class British accent that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I knew it at the time. Yeah.
And it's it was fun. We get the little scene of Dom sneaking away, which was kind of fun. I guess we don't find out later until how he did it, though. It was kind of like the safe switch. Five, right. The safe swap where you realize later how he got away. But
we do hear about Captain Deckard Shaw's highly decorated career, so we're doing some character rehab at this point.
Doing a little legwork.
This was the part coming up that I thought was like the most interesting, because I had actually read an article about this shortly before I saw this movie. And this was when Cypher hacks all the cars and takes control of all of these cars based on the computer systems in them. I remember reading an article like right around this time that was like, what would happen if hackers just like took over everything in the country? And it was about how like they could take over hospitals and they could hack cars and make like these automated cars just like crash into, you know, signs and.
The plot of Die Hard 4, right? I believe. Timothy Oliphant does that.
I've completely blocked out anything after Die Hard 3.
I mostly have. I remember he's a hacker and he takes shit over. But
I don't know how feasible this is, because you would think that there's like some old like Chevy Chevy Cruises that probably could do this.
A hell of a lot of autonomous cars in this part of New York. And it made me think of like the saying that we mentioned in the Bond rewatch/watch of that James Bond lives like 15 minutes in the future or something, where like I could buy all these autonomous cars like in 10 to 15 years, right?
Yeah.
But right now, like there were minivans. And as a guy who just did a lot of research on minivans, like, I mean, they have cruise control, they have automatic stopping. I don't know that you would have one that you would consider autonomous yet. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's like that she was such a good hacker that she can hack the computer chips in the car. So like any sort of computer chip in the car, she's able to take it over and make the car do stuff.
Sure.
But I still think that you're just going to have like a 1994, you know, like a Chevy Beretta that like there's no computer chips. Like, what are you going to hack? Like radio? Like there's nothing in there that you could hack.
Yeah. It's a really fun sequence, I think. It's a fun idea for a sequence.
Yeah, I like when she says make it rain and the cars actually like kind of fall. And I think we get the follow-up to this, we get an even better sequence, which I really like the whole the grappling hook. Like the whole family working together to try to stop Dom, the grappling hook hitting Dom and hitting his car, and they're trying to stop him. And it's like you're just seeing power against power. And I like that because it's different than anything we've seen in 7 movies so far.
And in both cases, like they're finding interesting ways to like keep cars front and center in a series that wouldn't need to be about cars anymore. Right. Like it's essentially like we've moved on from racing movies to heist movies to now just basically a spy movie. Mm-hmm. But they're still able to like kind of keep that aspect alive in an interesting way.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's fun to see, like, again, you're seeing the different character combinations. I think you have Tej and Ramsey together. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really even talked, you know, like the other thing about this movie is it's like the family has grown so much, right? Like all we've talked about so far is like Dom, Hobbs, Shaw, a little bit of Letty,
yeah,
Cypher, right? And there's a lot of characters, like great characters we've liked throughout the series, like Roman, Tej, that were just like, there's they pop in for a funny joke or a good quip, you know, but there's they just aren't doing as much in this movie because there's just so many other characters to serve.
What I'd like to see happen, I don't know if it would happen in 9, but eventually, is like kind of giving each character some sort of arc, right? Because like it's hard to do when there's so many characters, but it can be done. Like a good example, going back to Mission Impossible, I think, is in Ghost Protocol. Like in Ghost Protocol, every team member has some sort of arc happening. Like even though they're not Tom Cruise, they're not the main character. Like Paula Patton has an arc, Simon Pegg has an arc, Jeremy Renner has an arc. They all have their own stories that like are happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It would be cool to, you know, figure out a way to do that where, like, you know, Tej has something happening, Roman has something happening, and doesn't need to be big, doesn't have to be anything super consequential, but like just so that like they're not there as like, you know, tag alongs, right? Mm-hmm.
And I do think that they get more to do as we get into the last act when they go to the Arctic. Like we're seeing some of these pairings, right? We're seeing Roman and Scott Eastwood there in the sub. Like they do get a little, but yeah, I mean, all they're there to do is just to serve the mission. And
yeah, they have like jobs, but their characters don't necessarily have, you know.
Yeah.
Anything to do.
Yeah. So before we get there, we've got a. Oh, I did. Okay, good. I wrote down a car that I liked in this scene. That's good because I wasn't sure which car I liked. We get a little bit of continuity, though, right? We've got so Elena gets killed, but we do get the Damon Hansu character mentioned. Damon Hansu, yes.
Thank you. It's like Django. The D is silent.
All right. Yes, Django. That's all right. Edit that out. No, that's all right. I gotta get it right. His character is mentioned. We hear from stealing DVDs to stopping World War III. We get that referenced as well.
Yes, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So at least they're like, yeah, remember where we started, and now we're just. It's actually something that I was thinking about, and this isn't really a spoiler, but I was watching Loki today, and just like the craziness going on in Loki, and I was thinking back to Iron Man 1. And I'm like, oh, all this craziness is going on in Loki.
Yeah.
And it's like, remember just how simple Iron Man 1 was.
Yep, for sure. I remember thinking that during Endgame, you know, like just the very humble beginnings, right?
Right, exactly. Like there's all this world that Tony Stark had no idea was even going on. And I guess that's what Nick Fury says to him, that like at the end, I think he says something along the lines of like, you have no idea how big this is or like, how deep this goes.
It actually reminds me of something that I remember, I think Ivan Reitman said about Ghostbusters, which was that they knew that by the end of Ghostbusters, really crazy things were going to be happening, right? A giant marshmallow man is going to be walking down the road, and it's going to have to be believable. So his whole like strategy was, you open with almost the real world, right? Like you're almost in the real world. The only difference is that there is a ghost in this scene, right? Like a ghost shows up, and then they gradually, as the movie goes on, ramp up the ridiculousness until by the end, it's not jarring when, you know, there's a marshmallow person climbing a building. And this has just done that over many movies.
Right. Like you start, your baseline is not reality. Your baseline is enhanced reality.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And you're building off of that. All right. So then we go to, Russia. And looks very CGI at this point. I just thought, it just looked like it was a cartoon to me.
Agreed.
Yeah. And I feel like there was a Bond movie that I had the same reaction to. Was it Die Another Day?
Probably.
Yeah. Where I was just like, okay, this just does not look real at all.
Which is unusual for Bond movies because typically they're always, and I mean, even in Die Another Day, they were on location. They filmed in, I think, in Iceland. And they were really there, but yeah, it did have a kind of a some sort of phony feeling about it, right? And I think it's just because they're dealing with, I mean, there's definitely a lot of CGI happening with like,
right,
you know, giant submarine chasing them through the ice and all those things. Like,
I mean, they're driving on the ice. Yeah, CGI. Right. It just really stuck out to me.
Like,
come on, this movie wasn't made in 2006. Like this was 2017.
Yeah, I also started kind of losing track of the plot at this point. And I like, because I remember like not really remembering, okay, like, what is Cypher trying to do with the submarine? Like, I know they explain it. Like, I know it's explained in the movie that
yeah,
she's going
to EMP on the sub. So I think she's trying to release the EMP so she can take control of the sub.
Yes. Yeah, they have to do the EMP to, like, reset the sub, right, so she can take control or whatever. But it just – I wasn't really invested in that happening, right? I was just kind of watching.
Yeah, and I don't really know why did Cypher want to do this? Like, Cypher, it seems like, has been the brains behind the last couple movies, right? She was behind Owen Shaw. She was behind Deckard Shaw. She's now just taking, you know, she'll do it herself. But, like, for what reason? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out.
She wants the nukes that are on the sub.
Just for money?
I guarantee they talked about it, and I just don't remember.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because I'm playing the movie on mute in the background right now, and she's talking to Dom right now, and I feel like this is probably the scene where she's explaining her master plan, and I'm trying to remember what she said. But, like,
so you're gonna see again, a baby shortly.
I think we just saw the baby. But I'm pretty sure she talks about it, and I just was a little checked out, I think.
Yeah. Well, they should do a better job. All right, so then we've got, you know, everybody's going off on their missions. We've got Roman and Eastwood. They're in the sub. They're trying to read Russian. Letty kicks guy into a propeller. Just straight up murders a dude.
Yeah, and I thought it was funny because The Rock comes up to her, right? And you think he's going to give, like, a quip or a pun. And I can't remember what he says, but it's just basically like, oh, gross.
Yeah, no, I think it's along those lines. It's like, yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah, good timing from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that at this point, you know, Hobbs is like the leader. Like, he's just become the de facto leader of all of them, too. I do like when they work together in these movies, especially at this point. You know, like, I prefer Hobbs as the leader of the family over Toretto. So I'm a bigger fan of Hobbs. So.
Okay.
Sorry, Ben. Everybody's driving on the ice. We've got the orange Lambo driving through, which is what Roman is in. Fun that he's driving this car. If you've ever driven rear wheel, you do not want to drive that on ice, especially on a big, big surface of ice.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably some good Michigan knowledge.
Yeah. We've got Tej saving Roman with the tank grappling hook.
That was fun.
Yeah. And Tej in like a big... I don't know, it's like a mini Hummer, basically, that he's driving. Mm-hmm. And then we get the introduction to the best part of, I think, the best part of this movie, and that's the Shaws taking over the plane, saving the baby, the two Shaw brothers working together. So
yeah, it's a really fun sequence. Like, I feel like there's the choreography of the action is pretty cool. Like, mm-hmm. they're doing, especially when you get to, like, Deckard with the car seat and he's just mm-hmm. like having to juggle both. It reminded me of a much, 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 much worse movie called Shoot 'Em Up, which I am not a fan.
Oh, I love Shoot 'Em Up. No, I love Shoot 'Em Up.
I know you do. I have a very strong hatred of that movie. but the that kind of aspect of action scene where hero has to take care of a baby while mm-hmm. killing everyone. Like, I kept thinking about it while I was watching this scene. But
no eating carrots in these scenes.
Yeah, no eating carrots, and just general better filmmaking. But so the one thing I would dock it a little bit for is just the amount of – I feel like they're doing a little bit more rehab on the Shaw character here because of the amount of time he spends being nice to the baby, right? Mm-hmm. Of like talking to him, telling him how it's going to be fun and this is great. Like, and he keeps taking time out to like connect with the baby, which each individual time it happens, I think is kind of funny. But to me, like, it would have been a better scene if you just see him taking care of business while also taking care of the baby. And then instead of like him talking and like, you know, like cooing at the baby and just being like a little, I think he's being a little too friendly, like mm-hmm. just give the baby like a wink, you know, just like have him get like just less is more. Like, that would have been a cooler moment, I think, of him just like just a little wink. And
but
and
we've never seen him with any children. So maybe he's just got a soft spot for kids.
He does. Well, I think that's what they're trying to show. Right. But to me, it just, I don't know, like I think you could have done more with less, if that makes sense. Like,
and I think you could have done more with the Chipmunk song. I don't think they use that enough.
Oh my God. And why was it not Baby Shark? I mean, kids don't know the chipmunks anymore. It's all.
I don't think Baby Shark was a thing in 2017.
It was.
In Hobbs and Shaw, I think it might have been made more sense. I think it was like.
Maybe not when they. I don't know. So, I mean, my daughter was born in 2018, and Baby Shark was big then, and I think it had been for a little while. So we'll get to the bottom of this, but
yeah.
All
right. So then, so we get all of that going on. We've got Tej is driving his car. Tej kind of like taking the second lead after Hobbs. Doing a lot. Hobbs gets his hands on a torpedo, just grabs it with his bazooka hands.
He does. He grabs the torpedo and redirects it. it's not
quite the most
ridiculous thing he does in these two movies, though. He's going to do something way crazier at the end of the next movie. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that you think there's something. Going back to the plane, I wrote down a quote from Shaw. "You were going to shoot a baby, you sick bastard." I just thought his delivery of that was very good. That's like a kind of a preview for what we're going to get in Hobbs and Shaw.
Right.
I watched this movie right around 4th of July, so I had to write down we're going to need a bigger truck.
Yeah.
Which was said when they're driving down the ice, which, of course, Jaws. There's a "Why Are You Always Yelling?" You know, some good meta jokes in there.
That was good,
This was supposed to be 10 miles that they were driving. This is where it's, again, like Fast 6, where it's this was 10 miles on the ice. This was about 100 miles that they're driving.
Yep.
At some point, Dom kills Tormund. Dom saves them, drives in. And he does the thing where he saves them from the heat seeker.
Yeah, he saves himself and then redirects it at the sub. And then they all save him by shielding him from the flames as one.
Yeah. Don't you think they should have been worried about the ice melting? Like, there's a lot of fire on the ice and there are big cars on the ice.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. Hadn't thought about that, but yeah, there's a lot of maybe that should have happened and just like one person fell in,
right?
And
that's Letty, you know, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that's how Letty leaves the series.
So then we get our we end with our barbecue, but they sold out now. They are no longer doing barbecues in LA. They're East Coast now. They're doing barbecues in New York City. I don't like their sellouts. In addition, they're not drinking Coronas, they're drinking Budweisers.
I didn't even notice.
At least some of them. There might be some Coronas, but definitely some Budweisers as well.
Okay. Interesting. Well, that's going to be coming up on my TV pretty soon, so I'll let you know what I see. But
I also wrote down as a quote, "Revenge of the Nerds or the Dark Knight." Oh, that's what Roman says.
Yes.
Because they're, you know, they're, we haven't talked at all about Ramsay, but throughout this movie, Roman and Tej were trying to woo Ramsay.
Right.
And he calls Tej Revenge of the Nerds. He calls himself the Dark Knight.
Right.
Dark Knight exists in this universe.
It does, as does, like, well, we got to keep a running tally of, like, pop culture things that exist, right? So we know James Bond exists, Mission Impossible. Yeah, which is interesting, because if James Bond exists, I was trying to think of connections of, like, who's been in these movies that's been in a Bond movie, right? And for whatever reason, the first thing that popped into my head was that The Rock's dad was in You Only Live Twice.
Oh, right, yeah.
So who fought Bond and You Only Live Twice?
I mean, in their universe? They talk a lot about Game of Thrones and who plays Tormund and Giantsbane in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly.
It couldn't have been Rhodes.
Yeah. And same with who's Missandei, right? Like,
and you know, Mission Impossible, we've got Vanessa coming Kirby. Vanessa Kirby coming up too. So yes, it's a big cinematic universe. And the final thing, Dom makes a big announcement. He says that they are naming the baby Brian. Did you see that coming?
Of course.
Yeah. Although I wish they would have named the baby Paul.
I did think about that too, because then it'd be like a little meta.
Yeah, a little wink. I think
he would wink at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'd be perfect. It would have been funny if just as a little like just give make him a Y Brian. You know,
B-R-Y. Oh,
yeah. Just
What do you think about Mr. Nobody being invited to their barbecue and Eastwood?
So. I mean, sure. I guess they're part of the family now. I don't know. Yeah. I was more weirded out again, just to beat a dead horse, that Shaw is there, because the last time you guys had a barbecue, you were mourning the person that he killed. Like literally you had a little prayer about those that weren't with you anymore. Yeah, the guy that killed him is now now at your barbecue.
Yeah. It's
allegedly.
It's one of these. Don't think too hard about it. Did Helen Mirren end up back in prison? Because she's in prison at the beginning of Hobbs and Shaw. I do not remember her being in prison at the end of this movie.
I don't think they show her in prison, but that, like, yeah, that's where she's ended up.
Because I know they show the flashback where Shaw isn't killed, right? And he's helped out by Tego and Don Amar.
Making a return.
Right, where Dom, you know, looks like he kills him and he actually gives him a syringe. And I even wrote down, he says Toretto, the way he says Toretto.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that she just came out of prison just to meet with Dom and then go back.
Or she went into prison after the fact.
Yeah. She seems like she's been in prison for a while in Hobbs and Shaw, in my mind.
That's a good point. Yeah.
All right. Well, do we do – I never can remember. Do we do MVPs and favorite cars?
I was trying to remember.
I think we do.
Okay, we do them before we move on to the next one, or do we do it at the end?
No, let's do it at the end. Do it at the end.
All right,
People who are avid listeners will be able to tell us. And by the time we do F9, we'll forget.
Yeah.
Oh, we only have one movie for that one.
Do it live.
All right. Okay, anything else on Fate of the Furious?
Not. Oh, the I'll just mention, I guess, the I think it was in this one where. So I remember there was two Italian Job references.
Definitely one in the next movie. I did not catch one in this movie.
The one in this one was, I think it was in this one because I watched them pretty close together, but where Jason Statham says, I think to The Rock, like, if we need, like, something about weightlifting a bus, we'll call you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which I had, so I haven't seen, I don't think, the remake of The Italian Job that Jason Statham and Charlize Theron are in and that F. Gary Gray directed. So this
I forgot he did that. Okay.
Yeah, this is a big Italian Job, F. Gary Gary. This is a big reunion for that movie, really. But I don't think I saw the remake. I know I've seen the Michael Caine one. And I don't. Have you seen either of those?
No.
Okay. So I'm not going to tell you exactly what the reference is, but it's it has to do with the ending of the movie where both buses and lifting weights come into play. A weight, not like pumping iron, but the idea of weight. And so a weight in a bus has to do with the ending of The Italian Job. So when he says, like, if we need someone to weightlift a bus or whatever he says, like, I'm like, oh, okay, it's an Italian Job.
That's
fun.
Yeah. All right, that's
cool. I don't know if the remake ends the same way, but
it's been a long time since I've seen the remake. Maybe I'll watch them both at some point.
There you go.
All right. Well, yeah, maybe we'll pop into other things. So Hobbs and Shaw, next movie. This one definitely got a different feel to it right from the beginning. We see, we see Hattie and we're introduced to her and she is stealing the virus, which is called the snowflake virus. I like that more than the coronavirus. Like
snowflakes.
Yeah. It reminds me of Snowflake the Dolphin from Ace Ventura.
Okay. I was just thinking of Twitter insults, but
like snowflakes. No, I still think of Snowflake the Dolphin. And we get that Time in a Bottle song, which I actually really like. That is like, it does not feel at all like Fast and Furious song. Like it's not like a rap song. It's just a slow. I think that's what makes this feel like a different type of movie, right? Like
it definitely feels different.
Like we're not opening with the opening crawl. You know, if this was a Star Wars movie, right? We're opening a little bit differently.
Yeah.
All right, so after that brief delay, that was no delay at all for anybody listening, thanks to your brilliant editor, we are back at the intro for this movie, the opening for this movie. We're introduced to the Idris Elba character. He is playing Brixton, and he's got that very sweet motorcycle. What do you think about his motorcycle as a new vehicle that we're getting in this series?
That's a pretty neat motorcycle.
Mean motor scooter.
Yeah. It's autonomous. So, you know, I guess Cypher could take it over if she wanted to.
Yeah.
There's a few moments of like, I guess there's this one thing towards the end, which is pretty cool when he's like on the ground and it just like slides up under him and picks him up.
That's what I like. I like that he can go under the semis and things like that. He goes kind of like horizontal. You mentioned Cypher. Is it just like what is it called? Like where it's like the most obvious answer is not Chekhov's gun, but whoever's law. That like is Cypher the voice. Occam's razor. Yeah.
No. No, Cypher's not the voice, because then they would just have it be Cypher, I think. It's got to be someone we're not expecting to be a bad guy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Nobody, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Could be Mr. Nobody. I don't know, though. When they, like, I feel like I would recognize Kurt Russell's voice, because, like, the whole, like, distortion will drop out sometimes when it sounds almost like a real voice, and it makes you, like, I don't know if they actually have the actor who they have in mind or actress, like, doing it, but maybe they don't. But it slips, and then it sounds like a normal voice every once in a while, and that's when I thought, you know, oh, that sounds a little bit like Ryan Reynolds. But
I'll tell you what, until you started talking about this when you watched this movie last night, I just assumed it was either a computer, and it was just some computer simulation that was telling him what to do, like a Westworld type thing. Or it's just going to end up being some villain that is just like they introduce a new villain.
Okay. I could be wrong. I'd still have my money on it being someone that we thought was a good guy and is going to be bad.
Well, I hope you're right. It would be nice to have that kind of connection somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I might hear the voice in the computer right now, but I'm not positive. Yeah, after that brief interruption from the robot voice, we're still at the beginning of Hobbs and Shaw. I have no idea how long this podcast is. I know how long we've been on the Skype call for, but podcast might be getting a little up there. But that's right. This is the last one we're doing before the new Fast and Furious movie. We got to talk about everything. So we're in Hobbs and Shaw. We get Hattie. She injects herself with the snowflake virus before Brixton can get to her. I think this is about the time when you texted me and you said, so is Brixton just a Terminator? Was this when you thought he was a Terminator, or was this later in the movie?
No, it was right away, because we see his like POV and he's got Terminator vision with like, it's like, you know, analyzing the threats around him. And then, and then he like holds his hand up and like deflects bullets with his hand, and he's doing superhuman stuff. And yeah.
I mean, we saw Hobbs as a superhero. So, you know, it makes sense that Idris Elba's character Brixton is a supervillain.
Yeah. True.
This jumped ahead a little bit, but I feel like they wasted Idris Elba in this movie.
Yeah, he doesn't get that much to do, really. Like, I mean, he's kind of just gets to act cool, and I don't know, like he's just kind of a pawn, right? Like he's not he doesn't have much agency. He just does what he's told, and that's it. He's a robot. Yeah.
And I feel like an actor of Idris Elba's caliber. I mean, the cast in this movie is very good, and to get an actor like Idris Elba and to kill him off by the end of this movie, and he's just doesn't do a ton. Like, they could have given him a bigger role. He could have had the Mr. Nobody role, right? Or like a recurring role in this series. Maybe he just wanted to do the one movie, but I just feel like it was. It's like happens a lot in Marvel movies where you're like, oh, they got that awesome actor.
Yeah. And he
just kind of played a henchman. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's, I don't know.
Like Carrie Coon in Infinity War. Carrie Coon is an awesome actor and plays just like one of Thanos's like gods or whatever, gods of the apocalypse or whatever they're called, minions. So then we go to our split screen. I love this. I love the way that this is done. I think this is just, again, like this just feels so different than all the other Fast and Furious movies. So we're seeing Hobbs, we're seeing Shaw. They're both waking up for their day. We see how similar yet different they are.
Yeah.
We see them doing their breakfast, driving their different types of cars. Hobbs going to the gym. Shaw is going to the bar. And they both get calls about the virus. Is your morning, would you prefer your morning to be more like Hobbs or more like Shaw?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like,
I know where you're going to go.
Oh, all right. Well, where am I going? Tell me.
You're going with Shaw, because you would rather go to the bar than go to the gym.
Wow. You're just judging me so hard right now. I was going to say I would like to be more like Hobbs, but I feel like I would probably be more like Shaw.
Yeah, Shaw's more fun.
Yeah, but he also, I mean, he's also very decadent. You know, he's like, he's a fancy boy. And I feel like if you looked, and if you looked around my house, you would think I'm not very fancy. So I feel like maybe there's a little bit of a combination, because Hobbs is doing some dad stuff too. So like,
definitely.
Yeah.
I like everything Hobbs does except the way he drinks or eats coffee. Like, he just puts the grounds in his mouth.
That's right. I don't like that. Like, yeah, but and Hobbs just drinks the eggs like Rocky.
Right. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's gross, but I understand that. But I would rather have the nice cup of coffee than the coffee.
Yeah, cups. You want to enjoy it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we kind of go back to this split screen again when they're both we have the like dueling fights. Right, we have a tattoo parlor fight, and I think it's like the bar. I think it's a bar fight as well going on.
The club. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like how they're showing like the duality of these two, that they're not so different.
You and I. Yeah.
Exactly. And we find out Magdalene is in prison. We hear about Deckard Shaw's sister, which I think you mentioned earlier. She's like 20 years younger than him.
Yep.
Big age difference.
Sure thing. Yeah, it makes sense.
No mention, though, of Owen Shaw during any of this. No, like, oh, maybe we should call your other brother to, like, get somebody else to help with your sister as well.
Yeah, but he's, like, the fuck-up brother, you know?
Right. Like, but still. No. Or, like, no, like, oh, we had to call you and not your brother because your brother would mess this up. Like,
yeah.
This guy doesn't exist in this movie.
Hmm. I feel like they mentioned him. Maybe not. I thought we got a mention, but I could be wrong.
I think it was in 7 where they mentioned that he was working for Cypher. I don't think he's ever actually mentioned in this movie. Never shows up in any cameo. I don't know why.
Yeah. Weird.
Then we get, they are each meeting with their handlers. So Hobbs meeting with his handler, Locke, Ryan Reynolds, and Shaw's meeting with his handler, Rob Delaney, played by Rob Delaney. Mentioned Rob Delaney earlier.
Very funny in this. He's got some good lines.
The whole thing, I'm like so distracted by like how much the actors are not actually like on set on the same day as each other. I don't know why. It really bothers me where I'm like, okay, they're just like talking through phones. Like there's just like completely different scenes stitched together.
Yeah. I mean, maybe like presumably, yeah, you would think that's why. But I don't know. Like Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds-ing so hard in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
this is, you know, right after the – and this is actually – the director of this movie did Deadpool 2 as well.
That's right. David Leitch.
Yeah. So and he's just doing – he's being Deadpool, basically.
He did Atomic Blonde, right?
I believe so. That sounds right. I think this is the only movie of his that I've seen.
You haven't seen John Wick?
No, that's wrong, because I've seen – I saw Deadpool 2. And I've seen John Wick. Yes.
Okay.
I've seen the first John
Wick. He was half of the John Wick directing team.
He wasn't director, but he produced Nobody. Not Mr. Nobody.
Not Mr. Nobody, yeah. Yeah, I've been wanting to watch that one, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which handler do you prefer? Do you like the Ryan Reynolds? Do you like Rob Delaney?
I'm going to go with Delaney. I think I just like the sad sack. Yeah. You know, the Ryan Reynolds is doing his Ryan Reynolds thing, and there's a lot of funny lines, but it's, you know, I don't know. It's funnier, I think, to see Rob Delaney show up as just kind of like the depressed, like, you know, like, oh, he beat me up and doesn't even remember me.
Yeah, it's nice that Rob Delaney could step away from Twitter long enough to film his scenes in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. He's a Twitter presence, man.
Very prolific. I wonder what he feels about being in the same franchise as Lucas Shaw. Or Lucas, what is his name? Lucas Black. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably got thoughts.
Yeah. I also feel like Rob Delaney did like 2 scenes in this where Ryan Reynolds had 4, right? Ryan Reynolds does a lot more. He's talking to
his daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's talking about Game of Thrones, just really, really mixing things together.
Yeah. It's called Hobbs and Shaw, but. Well, I don't know. Do you feel like it leans more towards one than the other? Like,
yeah, it's definitely more Hobbs than Shaw.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought, too, because obviously they go to Samoa and they meet his family. But you also have Shaw's sisters there the entire time. So, like, that kind of helps balance that out.
True. Yeah, we get multiple Shaws.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, it's – I guess it still does kind of come out a little bit more on the Hobbs end. But –
Yeah, I mean, we have 3 Shaws, 1 Hobbs, really. I mean, I guess we get some
Hobbs. Oh, we get a lot of Hobbs at the end, yeah.
Yeah, but they're not. Hobbs. They don't know how many have speaking roles, though.
Right, yeah.
some real life family members of the Rocks as well.
Yes, relatives of the Rocks. Or his cousin plays his brother, right?
Yes. Who's also a wrestler as well. Not him, but there's also a wrestler who's his nephew or his cousin.
I think it's his cousin. Yeah, who's always
played by Roman Reigns. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we hear about the CT-17 virus. Oh, just lovely. A virus with a teen name in it. Just
yes.
We were so simple back then. All we cared about was the Game of Thrones finale and the Rock eating pancakes.
It were so simple.
Yeah. Yes. This movie also feels like it was produced by Dwayne Johnson, and it feels like he's like, okay, I gotta have like my pancakes in here, and I gotta have like Samoa. Gotta have
the pancakes, cheat day, Samoa. Right. And not just that, but just the super positivity, mm-hmm. like around his character.
Great dad.
Yeah, that part kind of bothered me. What did you like?
Why did you feel like he's a better dad than you?
Well, I know he's a better dad than me, but like, they hit it so hard. Like, you don't have to, like, you can get away with that with like one or two lines. It was very insistent on him being a great dad.
But we got that, and this is the third movie that we've gotten that in.
Right. And that I meant to mention in the last one also, because we got that with like the soccer match. But it's, I don't know, it's too much for me, because it's like, you can just tell it's Dwayne Johnson dictating that, right? That like, oh, he's got to be a great dad. Yeah. And to me, like, what it made me think of, obviously this movie a lot, I'm thinking of Lethal Weapon, just because it's the buddy cop movie, right? It's the mismatched partners action movie. And the family scenes, when I look at the family scenes in Lethal Weapon, and obviously there's a differently styled movie, like Lethal Weapon is, as ridiculous as it is, a much more grounded movie than Hobbs and Shaw.
Right.
But
it's a superhero movie.
The family scenes in Lethal Weapon, right? When you go to Murtaugh's house, you get like very realistic family scenes, right? It's not like, oh, look at me being super dad, like I'm an action hero, but I'm also a great dad. It's you get like, okay, his kids are annoying him, his kids are like embarrassing him, but he also loves them, and it feels very real, right? Mm-hmm. And it feels like he's a real dad. And in this, it feels like he's a movie dad. It feels like he's just like, oh, we're checking a box, like he's good dad.
He's very polished.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like actual character moments. It seems like a point they're trying to make, right? Yeah.
When they're building, you know, more and more he's like this in each of the movies that we've watched in a row. What's weird, though, is that in 5 and 6, there's no reference at all to a child. Like, we do not know that he has a daughter in 5 and 6.
Right. You find out in 7, right? Yeah. Daddy's got to go back.
Right. Exactly. So it's like weird. It's like, oh, he's such a great dad, but he was gone for all of 5 in Brazil. I feel like that happened with The Rock in real life, though. Like, I didn't even know The Rock had kids, and then all of a sudden he has all these kids that I had no idea. He's very good with his image.
Yeah.
And in general, I agree with you on that. It does feel a little forced, but like The Rock is so charismatic in this movie.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like there's funny jokes happening, like the individual lines and stuff like on their own work, but like it's just like the sum of it is too much. is too much. He's getting a stack of pancakes on my screen right now.
Oh, so now you're on to Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
Just as a time check for where we are.
Just so you know, we're pretty much talking about these movies in real time.
I also think like this is definitely the funniest of all of the Fast and Furious movies is this one.
Yeah. This one is an action comedy, essentially. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. The other ones have jokes, but usually they're delivered by one or two characters as comic relief. This is like our two leads are just going back and forth insulting each other, and there's funny lines and also great action. So we get Rob Delaney and Ryan Reynolds are talking. My guy and your guy. Then we have the meeting. This is where we really get the clips back and forth. Like, this is what we saw in the jail in Fate of the Furious, but this time it's just better. It's just better written. The clips are, whether it's written or improv, like the clips just are more clever. They're more meta. We get Shaw making fun of how Hobbs says some bitch. And we get Hobbs making fun of Shaw's Harry Potter voice, which I'm only reading the books. I don't know what Harry Potter's voice sounds like, but
I can imagine it probably sounds like that.
You hear, I'm not even, well, I can't tell you who was cast as Harry Potter. That's a, right. That's a spoiler.
You know, I got a hard time.
He sounds exactly like Jason Statham, just so you know, even in the first
movie. I'm not supposed to talk about Harry Potter on podcasts, I've been told.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
So, yes. Anyways, get them from your library. Don't buy the books. That's what I say. Don't give J.K. Rowling any money. Just get them from the library.
By the way, you're right. I just saw a flashback to the childhood of the Shaws and just two kids.
Yeah.
Just two kids.
Right.
Owen is being retconned right out.
Yeah, I really think so. So we get parallel fight scenes where we're actually getting Hobbs fighting against Hattie. And she holds her own against the Rock. And at the same time, we've got Shaw being attacked by Idris Elba's character. Well, I'm blanking on his name right now.
Brixton.
Yes.
Brixton. Very British.
Yeah.
Very British name.
Saves the grenade. In this one,
it took a long time for that grenade.
Oh, definitely. Shaw is like an explosives expert grenade. In this movie.
Yeah.
Which is never referenced any other time, but I do think it makes sense considering that's how he killed Han, was that the car blew up. So I can see him being an explosives guy.
I also it struck me as strange that Hattie sets that grenade trap in her apartment, right? But presumably the people who are chasing her are her colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
She's been set up, and so it's gonna be MI6 chasing her. So you're setting that for your your friends.
Yeah, it's not a good way to prove that you've been
not
set
a good
up.
Way to prove. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So after the dueling attacks, we have Deckard being attacked by Etienne. I don't know if Brixton might actually not be there at this point. I think we don't see him meeting Brixton until later in the when they're in the headquarters for the CIA. He's just kind of generic henchman at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Hobbs is fighting Hattie Shaw.
Yep.
So he lifts her up much like a wrestling move. He just kind of one hand lifts her up, but she did hold her own for a while.
She did. And she's great. I think in this movie, Vanessa mm-hmm. Kirby is really fun. She does a good job.
She holds her own against him. And delivers some good action scenes. She's a good character. Fits in very well with the Shaw clan.
Yeah. And there's lots of fun, just throughout the movie. I think there's good, kind of novel action moments and things. I mean, obviously, if you kind of expect that from someone who was on the John Wick franchise, creatively choreographed action scenes were pretty well done in this, I think.
And even creatively choreographs car scenes, right? We talked about the, we talked about the motorcycle. We've got the McLaren as well. We've got Shaw's McLaren, and both kind of go under the semi trucks. They have the big car chase. But before we get there, of course, we have the CIA headquarters, where I love the line from Hobbs where he says, "Shoot her two times in the face," and she's like, "You can't do that." And just that interplay between them. Do you buy the chemistry romance that ends up happening in this movie between them?
No, I don't. I don't.
She's also 20 years younger than Hobbs.
It kind of it ruins the good dad vibe he had going.
Well, his daughter likes her, though. His daughter's like, "Oh, you're flirting with her. She's the cute spy." So his daughter approves. Spy's
just pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed forced to me. I don't know. And then as we were watching it, Sarah said they better not kiss at the end of this movie. And luckily she fell asleep just before they kissed. So that worked out. But
have you seen Edge of Tomorrow? I can't remember.
I've seen it several times.
Yeah. I mean, similar. It's kind of there's some similar types of forced romance in that movie. Another movie I'm talking about this week. So Hobbs video chats with his daughter. She gives him a hard time about flirting. They do the people's eyebrow back and forth, which if you're a wrestling fan, you'll recognize the people's or the corporate eyebrow, depending on what era you're in.
You don't even have to be a wrestling fan because I'm very aware of the people's eyebrow and elbow, both.
Yes. He does not deliver the people's elbow in this.
One day.
I think there's another movie where he does deliver the people's elbow. Maybe Rampage? There's definitely one where he does, or maybe I'm confusing with something else, but I think that he does deliver a people's elbow at some point in some movie. Somebody let me know what movie.
Hopefully on a giant lizard. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is on a submarine or something. He does it to something.
I'm not even joking. Like, it might be that.
A submarine. Nice. Yeah.
After the attack, they're running down the side of the building, like a reverse Batman and Robin going down the building.
It reminded me a little bit of Tomorrow Never Dies, too, when they jump out of the building and, like... But also, like, it was one of the moments where I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, there's... Anything can happen in this movie with, like... Because, like, Shaw, like, just casually is just like, I'm just gonna, like, disable this elevator, which will make it plummet to the ground quite safely.
They could have played up a little bit more, and I think they tried to do this, that, like... Hobbs is brute strength and Shaw is brains. Like, they really could have made it like brains versus bronze. And they sort of do at times, but they kind of, they don't stick to it that well.
So, yeah.
And if you're going by the Survivor seasons, it's brains, brawn, beauty. And so you could have had a being beauty. So it could have worked out perfect.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Do you actually?
No, I have no idea.
They did a season. And instead of just doing brain versus brawn, they did brain versus beauty. So they had beauty.
So they're saying if you're beautiful, you can't be strong or smart.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
And that's not even the most ridiculous tribe format that they had. There were much more ridiculous.
What are your top five ridiculous tribe formats?
Oh, man. I don't know if I have a top five, but...
That was a joke. Don't tell me.
There's heroes versus healers versus hustlers, because those three things go together.
Yeah. They all have agents.
Yeah. And there's also blue collar versus white collar versus no collar.
Wait, what's a no collar?
It's basically braid, broad beauty. They just gave it a different name.
Okay.
But no collar is like you're free spirit. Like, there was a guy who like sold coconuts. He's the best. He's hilarious. Someday we'll do these podcasts as you're watching through all the Survivor seasons. That will be maybe that's the next project.
I'm into it. All right, let's do it.
I'll do it with Sarah and you can sit that one out. All right, so. Yeah, we have the car chase. McLaren goes under the truck. We have the motorcycle going, goes through a bus, and that's how it gets stopped.
So
they're
able
to get away. They've got Hattie. They've got the virus. We've got a virus plot, which is, you know, clearly like Mission Impossible 2. But now.
Yeah. And it's even kind of similar to the Mission Impossible 2 virus, Chimera, because it's like it just eats your organs. And
right. You're like a turns you into goo. Bomb.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Were there any virus plots in Bond? Do we ever get a virus plot in Bond?
So let's see. We've got in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, the Angels of Death, all the girls that Blofeld had at his allergy clinic. Yeah, they were going to be unleashing a virus that was going to kill like crops and livestock.
But not a person virus.
No. And then, so this is, I was thinking Moonraker, but that's not a virus. That was going to be poison. He was going to like poison the world. I don't know if we've had like a super virus in Bond.
Kind of surprising.
There was a rumor that that's what they were working on for the next one. And that's one of the reasons that they kind of postponed. Kept postponing it, you know, so we'll see. But that's true. That's kind of strange they haven't touched on that. I remember.
Well, speaking of Bond plots, turns out Brixton can also control the media. So much like Tomorrow Never Dies. And also, was it Spectre also where we kind of – I mean, it's more when we get the like lair at the end of this movie in the middle of this movie, I guess, not in the end. You know, the like this high tech bunker, like that reminds me of, is that Spectre that there's that they go and meet him? Because I was like, there's a movie I've watched recently where a hero and a female go to a high tech lair. And I thought, I'm trying to think of which Bond it was.
Yeah, that would be Spectre. That's the one where they like, Skyfall brought back the idea of the lair, right? And that like Silva had that island. Blofeld Inspector does have the full high-tech lair with henchmen, with computer screens everywhere, and they're all in uniforms, like the
they're all like monitoring cameras and coverage and everything like that, right?
And they weren't like controlling the media, but they were like controlling or at least monitoring information everywhere, right? That was his whole plot, was he was going to take over the intelligence communities of every major nation.
Mm-hmm. And that's what this, yeah, that's what this bunker reminds me of. And then the yeah. media control, of course, reminds me of Tomorrow Never Dies. So we're getting yeah. lots of Bond in this one. Very much inspired by Bond.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll get to more later, sure.
And, well, we've got a Russian scientist that needs to be saved.
Yep. Eddie Marsan, who I always like to see pop up and stuff. Another, oh, no, I guess, what was he? Oh, I was thinking of The World's End. He's great in The World's End.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember his character in that. He's on Donovan, too, which I've never watched Ray Donovan, but apparently is a well-liked show.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that people like that. Trying to think if there's anything else that I... He looks... He's just one of those people who looks familiar. He's that guy.
Yeah. Oh, Mission Impossible 3. He's in Mission Impossible. That's what I was nice. Thinking of.
More ties yeah, to Mission Impossible.
He, so he was supposed... He was supposed to deliver the opening monologue of Mission Impossible 3, which is, if you remember, it's a very... JJ moment of a flash forward where like it's basically like an episode of Alias where you're gonna see kind of the pre-climax and then they flash back to show you how you got there, right? So the opening of Mission Impossible 3 is Tom Cruise strapped to the chair and they're telling him how he's got like a you know explosive device in his brain and blah blah blah, and it's Philip Seymour Hoffman is basically trying to find out information from him. And in the original script, Eddie Marsan was supposed to, his character was supposed to be delivering this whole monologue, and once they cast Philip Seymour Hoffman, they were like, okay, we have Philip Seymour Hoffman, we need to give him more to do. So they gave him that opening speech, which means Eddie Marsan has like no lines that entire movie because that was like his thing. So he's there in the background as the henchman but doesn't really say anything.
Don't we also right around in the beginning of that movie get Sawyer showing up for one scene as well?
That's Ghost Protocol.
Oh yeah, okay,
that's Ghost Protocol. That's the next one. Yeah. Okay.
More lost connections there.
Yeah.
All right. So the Russian scientist, the only place where they sell it is in London. So they go and get him. And then we get Shaw's hideout. So yeah, we will be going to Hobbs's home. Yeah. But
and another McLaren. He's got two yes. McLarens.
So in addition to McLarens, he's got some Mini Coopers. And he says this yeah. one is from a job over in Italy. So,
yeah.
Very overt reference.
We got another Italian job reference. Yes. And since you mentioned that, I do want to – we didn't talk much about F. Gary Gray earlier, but I just wanted to mention, like, you know, that's – it was another director change-up, right? Because we had Justin Lin for several movies in a row. He's kind of the – essentially, like, the auteur of this series at this point, right?
He comes back. Yeah, and we did have the Conjuring and Saw guy as well.
Yeah, James Wan is in Seven. And then – I guess there was a little bit of not controversy, but there was a lot. There was kind of back and forth on who was going to direct 8 because James Wan was originally going to do it, I guess, but then wanted to do Conjuring 2. So they let him out to go do that because I think he'd been contracted for 2 movies. Justin Lin was he had already done Star Trek, I guess, but was I can't remember why he didn't come back for 8. But and then I saw some other rumors that one that was very like interesting was that they considered Shane Black to do it and but only to direct it, which seems I wonder if that's the reason he would have dropped out, because if you're going to like you don't just hire Shane Black to direct a movie, he's going to write it.
Yeah.
And but just what I'm thinking about, like, you know, we've already made some Lethal Weapon comparisons, but not just Lethal Weapon, like. You know, he's kind of like between Lethal Weapon and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Nice Guys, like that's his wheelhouse, right? Is the mismatched buddy action comedy. Like that's what he does. And I would be interested to see what he would do in this series. And I wonder what kind of soured that deal, whether it was the writing gig or I don't remember exactly how this happened in the timeline, but obviously, you know, the Predator did not light the box office on fire. So maybe
and that was before this, because this was just a couple of years ago. This was 2019.
Yeah. The Predator was what, like 2017? But that would have been probably when they were prepping this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? I mean, I think that I would love to see him. I'm a big fan of Iron Man 3 also. So I'd love to see him.
Jump into this.
I honestly just want to see Nice Guys too. I would love to see Nice Guys too, but
yeah, I do need to read this Nice Guys. I like that.
Such a fun.
It is interesting when we're talking about like prepping this movie, like probably trying to schedule this movie
with The Rock's schedule, especially around this time. The Rock was in so much stuff around this time.
Yeah.
Skyscraper, he's in Jumanji 2. He's in Ballers. He's in this movie. Ballers. Yeah, it's just, yeah. The guy keeps very busy. So.
Yeah. The other F. Gary Gray thing I wanted to mention. Obviously, we talked about the Italian Job and how he kind of had, had a little reunion. But and everyone knows him, from Friday and from Straight Outta Compton. But the thing that I wanted to mention, which for whatever reason, as a teenager, I don't know, I rented The Negotiator like multiple times.
Oh, I love that movie.
Negotiator? Like, yeah. And I really need to revisit it because I feel like it's not that strong in my memory. I just remember in high school and maybe middle school, I think, me and my sister both were really into that movie.
Yeah.
And
I remember seeing that in theater. That was a
great movie. And I remember it's just like a really strong thriller. And do you remember Kevin Spacey's name in that movie? Hold on. I'm going to look it up.
No.
You're looking up real fast. Bear with me.
I thought you were going to say Barry something. I'll give another shout out to another F. Gary Gray movie that we did on the Movie Ladder last year, and that's Set It Off from the early 90s.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that.
It's a good movie. Yeah, it's good. It's kind of hard to find on streaming. And it was like the third or fourth movie we did on the podcast, but that was fun.
Yeah. Chris Sabian was his name.
That's right, Sabian.
Like me and my sister would always like, that was like our name for like someone who's really good at something was Chris Sabian. Mm. And I remember when Nick Saban became famous, I always thought of Chris Sabian whenever I heard the name Nick Saban.
You know, he was at Michigan State before he made it big.
Was he?
Yeah, in the late 90s, just for a couple of years. And then he left. Another movie, we're just going down every rabbit hole there is, every tangent, yep. But Copland, another good one. It's not at all F. Gary Gray, but it's just a movie that came out around the same time as The Negotiator and it's
about the police officers. That's a Mangold joint.
Yeah, that's a good one. Great cast in
there. Yeah.
All right, so yes, Shaw's Hideout. We get them. They're gonna go to fly somewhere. I don't even know where they're flying at this point. They're not going to Samoa yet.
No.
Do you know where they're flying? Are they flying to Moscow? I think they're flying to Russia, right? To the ETN. They're going to try to find the ETN facility.
I can't remember.
Yeah. I believe they're flying somewhere in Europe. And but they have to have aliases. So we have Franz Gruber. What do you think of Franz
Gruber? Gruber, yeah. I did laugh at that. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. Funnier than Mike Coxmall?
Yeah, it got me thinking because I watched this and then also just quick personal backstory right now is that I'm just grossly out of shape right now and I've signed up to start playing hockey again in a couple weeks, which I haven't done in a year and a half. So I've been jumping on the Peloton pretty much every day for the last few days, and my plan is if I do it every day for 2 weeks, maybe I won't die in my first hockey game. Mm-hmm. And today I was on there and I was thinking about how the instructors are always calling out the names of all the people on the ride, right? And I'm like, and at one point he started reading a name and stopped himself halfway through, and I'm like, that was a Mike Oxmall situation. Yeah. He caught himself, and I was like, man, why did I just use my real name? Why didn't I think of a cool vulgar name to use here, so I might have to change it. But
yeah, well, you gotta go. Mike Coxmall is one I've never heard before, so that's at least
that was new to me.
Yeah,
huge genius. I used to be so. Do you remember to any of the older folks out there? Do you remember AOL Instant Messenger? My first,
We're not old.
No, we're not old. My first AOL AIM screen name was Hugh Jass 42, and it wasn't just mine. For whatever reason, like, we just decided, because I was like,
well, yeah, 14. There was 41 other ones of
that. Well, there was, no, I seriously, I landed on 42 because I kept checking different numbers. That was the first one that landed, and I ended up using it, like, it's still, I use it for, like, profiles and stuff. Like, it's my hockey number. Like, that's all because of this profile there. But from Huge Ass. And it wasn't just my screen name. I don't know why we didn't, they were free, right? AOL Instant Messenger names were free, but for whatever reason, we had one family computer, so that was our family screen name. So my sister used it, my parents used it, we were all Huge Ass 42.
Mr. Jass.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of Bond movies, we get you know, when we do get Franz Gruber, he's dressed in like the ski resort stuff. Well,
that's,
so
that's a Die Hard movie though.
Right. I know Franz Gruber is okay. Die Hard. But the like outfits, like the ski outfits, remind me of
something that was sure. in Bond movies. So. Yeah.
Yes, I do know the Franz Gruber reference. I was pointing at the screen when he said Franz Gruber. I don't know what name they used for Hattie. I don't remember what her.
I don't remember.
Yeah. We get The Rock just being super charismatic. Again, he's F1, F2, FU. And then he sits next to the lady and he says, I love your babushka. And I just thought that was just like, I'm just like, oh, like, he's just like,
tiny
he
shirt.
Just, yeah, he just like melts everybody's heart.
Yeah.
This might be my favorite scene in the whole movie. Like between both these movies, might be my favorite scene. Just the back and forth we get from them on the airplane.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna let her climb this mountain. And they're going back and forth across the aisle. The only thing holding you back is air and opportunity. And there goes the air.
Yeah, yeah. That was that felt very like professional wrestling to me.
Yes,
it was fun.
I mean, your tolerance may vary for like how much of like The Rock being a wrestler there is, but yeah, I love it.
I enjoyed that part, and then we get a big cameo.
Yes, totally forgot this happens. Kevin Hart in this movie as well. What is it? Big Johnson and what's the movie they're in together? The CIA movie.
The World It Takes. Yeah, Little Hart, Big Johnson. Yeah,
Little Hart, Big Johnson. Yes.
Yeah. Which I haven't seen.
I have not either.
And to me, like, I don't know, I've seen some, like, he's done some really funny stand-up that I've seen, but for whatever reason, like, a little bit of Kevin Hart goes a long way for me. But I thought he was hilarious in this. I thought he was really funny. Like,
This was the perfect amount of, this is like the perfect serving size of Kevin Hart.
Yeah, exactly. Like, bring him in there, have him just kind of do his shtick for like 5 minutes and. Mm-hmm. Hop in again towards the end on the toilet and you're good.
Yeah. And he also gives like, this is how they get the jet that they're able, like he gives you like a little bit of logic behind like how they're able to get to Samoa undetected. And like the air marshal thing is very fun. Like, yeah, there's just, it's super fun when he shows up.
Yeah. Agreed.
So, then we see Deckard. He's kissing the woman that he's used to work with. I really like, Vanessa Kirby's face when she sees Shaw kissing this woman, like she's just so grossed out by her brother acting like this.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Of Baby Driver.
Oh, she's in Baby Driver. That's right.
Yeah.
So they're just like getting weapons from her, I think is what's going on there.
Yeah. Because we get a little, you know, it's always, I feel like that's kind of a trope as well. Like you've got like the connection where you spend a scene like at your connect getting like whatever you need for your mission
suiting up.
Right.
And they drop out of the plane. We have our two hallway fight, which we heard at the beginning of this podcast, and you know, access denied, so they have to like keep pushing the guy's face up against the eye scanner. And we get the reveal that Etienne made it look like he turned on his own team, that Shaw turned on his own team. It was not actually Shaw. Shaw's a good guy. Character redemption.
Still killed Han.
Yeah. The truck is going out of the building. We get the flamethrower. We get the running on top of the cubes. Very Indiana Jones running on top of the cubes.
Yeah. So, old Crystal Skull action.
Yep. And then we're going to Samoa. Send it to Samoa, right? Anything else on that big truck?
Well, so I will say that, like, for whatever reason, like, this section of this, the action scene that you were just describing is where the movie, I started to kind of, like, lose the movie, or it started to lose me. And, I did enjoy. So before that, we get like the scene of Brixton trying to turn them right. Like he's got them hooked up to the car batteries, and this is the scene where they like.
Oh right, yes, I skipped over all of that.
Yeah, I feel like they kind of like they're positioning this as when they fully become a team, right, or a partnership, right? Yep. This is their like lowest moment, and they're still obviously like kind of like. You know, talking shit to each other, and There's some good stuff.
They use that as like a weapon, right? Like them yelling at each other.
Yep.
And like having their fight. They use that to delay and, you know, to create a distraction.
Yeah. And there's some fun moments there, but then the action scene after that, even though there's some cool stuff happening, is where I started to kind of like, I don't know, just the pacing felt like it was starting to drag. And just to like jump ahead a little bit, like this movie had me pretty well for like the first two thirds of it. And then it was around this point where I just started losing interest in it for whatever reason. And maybe it would get better on rewatch. I feel like this is probably a movie that has some rewatchability with a lot of like, you know, I probably missed some quips and missed some like references and stuff, but
right.
I feel like it's losing steam. Like it seems like we're at the climactic meeting and then we just pull back and like, and so the whole extended chase after they break out, right, of them like, you know, they're chasing Brixton and vice versa or whatever. And they're on the, you know, in that little dune buggy thing where she's flying out of it. Like I checked out during that for what, I don't know why. But it was too long. I think it was too much. And from then on, I it was hard for me to get back into it.
Yeah. I can see that because it is just kind of generic, like escape the lab before it blows up type thing. What I will say is what brings me back into it is the Samoa setting that they go to, because it's just so different. We don't have a lot of – like, we don't see a lot of movies that take place in the Samoan setting that we get.
That was cool.
And so I do – like, I get more into it when we get there. Also, like, you know, there's just some fun cameos, and, like, I like how they use the environment a little bit more.
It feels almost like a different movie, though, suddenly. It feels like we're entering a different movie.
Well, that's probably because The Rock said, hey, we got to have the third act battle take place in Samoa, because that's my brand.
And then just the whole, like, kind of circling back to the good dad stuff, the whole kind of family solidarity, you know, uber positivity vibe of it was a little too much for me, right? Like, to go.
That's this franchise, though. That's what, like, you know, right around the fifth movie, like, this franchise became about, like, family is the most important thing.
Oh, for sure. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have done that. It's just they hit it over and over again in this sequence where, like, I don't think they needed to. I think they just overdid it. Like, you can have him show up and work with his family and have to resolve their differences. And just the fact that they're doing that and succeed is enough. You don't have to have them constantly talking about how that's what they're doing. Right.
Yeah. It's dumbed down a little bit.
Yeah. But,
no, I agree. It's for some reason for me, it doesn't bother me as much when it's The Rock doing it versus Vin Diesel. When Vin Diesel does it, I have less of a tolerance for it.
I think this may be like, our key divergence on this series, maybe, is that you're more of a Rock guy, and I feel like I'm becoming more of a Vin Diesel guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, they're diverging too. I'll be curious if the series, right, if we get the Fast and Furious movies, we get the Hobbs and Shaw movies.
Yeah, so they don't have to actually work together anymore.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe we get the Roman movies too. Roman will get like a TV show on Peacock or something.
He's going to get a Quibi show. Yeah. Like,
that's Roku now. Could get it. all right. So get to Samoa. I'm going to keep us moving before anybody else wakes up.
Well, we get to Skyfall is what you're saying.
Well, it is like Sky. I mean, it really is like Skyfall, right?
It is.
But like also that scene, right, with them hooked up to the car battery or whatever is like very similar to the island scene in Skyfall as well.
Oh, true. Yeah. And
where,
I mean,
like, Bond gets taken and he's getting tortured.
Yeah. That's just a Bond trope in general, right? Of Bond being tortured by the, or at least in some sort of death trap, or Lethal Weapon. Cause Lethal Weapon had the electric shock torture at the end, which is very similar. But a little more gnarly in that movie.
And that's a good point to say Samoa is like Skyfall. I didn't put it together, but you're right. It is like, you know, the Home Alone. Like, this is our house. We must protect it before the villain shows up.
And they have to do it in an unconventional way because they don't have access to like the high tech weapons that the villains are going to have.
The old ways are best. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, where you're going back in time, as they say in Skyfall, and they're going to use the old tools, the old technology, and
what the island will provide, brother.
It goes a little bit better in this movie than it did in Skyfall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the user family heirlooms.
Who's watched Moana a lot also recently in the last couple years. I was getting some fun Moana vibes.
Oh, yeah, that's the Rocks brand. I do love the montage that we get. I just wrote down montage, comma, fist bumps.
I love a good montage, and I especially love a good preparing for a final battle montage.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I kept thinking of is, how much they seemingly get done in that 24 hours essentially, which is I know they got a lot of people, but I keep thinking about all my home projects that I've been working on. The idea of I moved the thing from this end of the yard to this end of the yard. That's good enough for today. And these guys are these guys
pushing cars, and
they're doing a month's worth of work in 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel very,
Rock. Don't compare. You're not, you don't
not compare the yourself. I'm not his brother. I'm not one of his cousins. Not his mom. But
it's funny too, because all of this has Roman Reigns front and center. And do you recognize Roman Reigns? I mean, have you heard the name? Okay. So he's the guy with the long hair. He plays, he plays Hobbs's brother in this. Especially at the time in 2019, he was the biggest wrestler at the time. Okay. And he's still pretty big. He's been champion a bunch.
Nepotism.
He's kind of the fans really, he's a bad guy now, but at the time he was a good guy. The fans all hated him because he was just he was a big star because he's related to The Rock pretty much. It wasn't the reverse. Because
The Rock started as a villain.
Right. And then they finally embrace. So it's funny because he's kind of like John Cena, who we're obviously going to see in the next movie. So they like to take the biggest name in wrestling for these movies. But to have this guy who is a very well-known celebrity, and he does not say one line of dialogue in this movie. He's just there fist bumping The Rock and getting supplies and moving something from one spot to another. It's just such a funny spot for him.
Maybe in this. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know until I looked up afterwards, when I was reading the Wikipedia page, that's who that was. But
it's fun to have him in this. But it's just it's a very random cameo. I guess just because he's related to The Rock, that's why he's in it. But and there's a couple other Samoan wrestlers who are not in this, but I was surprised that they didn't. They could have cast all of the Samoan characters as from these Samoan wrestlers.
Yeah.
So then we get the big attack. Brixton throws a motorcycle. The attack starts at dawn, which actually I wrote that down because I thought that was interesting, because the attack starts at dawn. So it starts when it's really dark.
Yeah.
And then as the battle is going on, it's getting brighter and brighter out. So it's the reverse. Yeah. I feel like a lot of times it's sunset is when the villain shows up, right? It's getting darker out.
It is it's the reverse Skyfall even.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's true. And there is a lot of Skyfall in this movie, isn't there?
It's not only night to dawn, but this to me was this movie's example of the endless runway, which is the longest 30 minutes of all time, because Vanessa Kirby has 30 minutes right before the extraction or whatever of this virus
that
we haven't mentioned, but she's got inside of her also Mission Impossible 2.
Yep.
When Naya shoots herself with the virus to transport it, right? Same deal. And she has to kind of survive for 30 minutes. And I realize it's probably, close to real time in movie time. Probably it was maybe 20 minutes of movie time, mm-hmm. right? But just the fact that they went from pitch black to bright daylight, not only bright.
Might be an island thing. I mean, latitude, longitude, where the island is, maybe.
Maybe. And then not only that, but then it's just torrential storm.
Well, they knew the storm was coming.
Did know the storm was coming. But it felt so much longer than 30 minutes to me from when they were peacefully waiting for the battle to start to when they're having the final confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very quick.
Yeah. In that time we get Charlotte's go fishing. They pull down the helicopter with the Rock Hobbs pulling the chain to pull the helicopter down. they're about to go over the cliff. I like when The Rock says, hit him with the moonshine, which is
that's Nas. Right. They're Nas. They finally got some Nas in this one.
Yeah. And the helicopter chain, he grabs it by hand. It starts getting this is like
that's the moment I was talking about earlier, was like the most unrealistic thing The Rock does is that he holds a truck and helicopter together with his brute strength, even if only for like a second.
Yeah,
like
I mean, I guess it was like we'd already seen Captain America do that just a couple years before, but yeah, he's also Captain America. So they go over the cliff, it's storming, we get the big slow-mo fight. He says, here comes your kryptonite. Oh, because they keep referring to Black Brixton Superman. As Black Superman. Yep, yeah. Which we are getting Black Superman. So they will live into existence.
Yeah.
And once again, you set me up as a traitor. They fight him. And I don't have anything written down, but all ends well. Hobbs and Shaw win.
Yeah, this goes back maybe into like The Rock's brand of positivity and stuff, but when they decide not to kill Brixton at the end, I'm like, mm-hmm. come on, like mm-hmm. you should be kicking this guy off the cliff right now. Like,
well, he does go off the cliff, but not because of ETN's computer system.
And it's like, and it's not even, it also like, so to me that kind of weakens them. Like not that they're like it. I don't know. This guy has been, you know, trying to kill you for this entire movie.
Trying to release a big virus.
A virus. It's going to kill the entire planet.
Right.
You can't kick him off a cliff. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think that happens in movies like this a lot.
But like, what did they think they were going to do with him? They only by a hair's breadth were they able to stop him, like in a fist fight, right? Like, mm-hmm. he could have like. The moment that they stopped to talk to him about how we're not going to kill you was enough time for him to decide to kill them, right? Like, he's a superhuman. And I just didn't, like, what are you going to do with him? Like, you're just mm-hmm. going to arrest him? You can't arrest this guy.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but the way he does die, the way that it's done, you know, remotely, it just, that weakens his character to me, like Brixton's character, who, like we said before, you know, is a kind of a badass fighter and Terminator type guy, but doesn't have a lot going on in terms of like villainy himself. Like, he's just pawn, and the fact that he gets killed that way too, it just makes him less like, and it kind of dampens his cachet to me, mm-hmm. The way he goes out. But
yeah, I mean, it's a shame. It's like, I feel like there's other movies like this where the end of the movie is like, oh, this, I guess it's like Avengers, right? Like, oh, Loki wasn't the real villain. It was Thanos the whole time.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe we'll find out who the voice behind the man was if we ever got Hobbs and Shaw 2. This movie did really well.
Maybe not a man. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost $800 million at the box office and a budget of only $200 million. So
worldwide.
Very successful. Yeah. So Hattie is saved. We do have kind of some setup between Hattie
and... We got the kiss before the final battle.
Right? Oh, right, on the cliff.
Yeah, right, they talk about how they're like, oh, we all have things we regret in our lives, and let's promise that we're going to fix those if we see mm-hmm. a dawn or whatever, which...
Right, another dawn.
Yeah. It to me, like...
I didn't even write it down because it was just kind of generic.
Yeah, and I don't know. It seems like it should work, but I don't know if it's the age difference, but like, maybe if they had cast an actress who was actually Jason Statham's age, so it would make sense that they were brother and sister, and then it would make sense that The Rock would maybe fall for her. That might make more sense, but also I don't want them to recast Vanessa Kirby because she's great in this. So I don't really know the solution there, but
I don't think we ever got enough build up between Hobbs and Hattie. Like, yeah, I know that they had interactions, they had the fight, but like, it's the three leads just kind of gives, like, it's just that you never get like enough time between
them. There's no romantic chemistry there. There's no sparks between them. Mm-hmm. It seems very like forced and kind of perfunctory, right? Like,
yeah. I think that's so much of this is like, you know, whether it's The Rock or whether it's the other producers like trying to do this image, it's like, okay, we got to like check Xbox, Y-bot, you know, like, just doesn't quite work.
I'm going to throw in quick just another Mission Impossible reference, because there's a similar, like, in starting with Rogue Nation, right? where we've got oh, why am I blanking on her name?
Anyway, keep talking. I'll come to you.
Ugh, this is gonna drive you crazy. She's like one of the best parts of that movie. So Elsa is her, or Ilsa Faust is her character's name, right? You'd think she's being set up as a love interest for
Rebecca
Ethan Hunt.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah.
I had to Google it. I tried to just come up with Ferguson.
Yeah. You're awesome. So she's great in both of the movies she's been in for that series. But like, you think they're kind of forcing her into that role of love interest, and they don't quite do, I mean, they never have that, like, oh, the forced kiss or the forced whatever. Like, it, you know, we're two movies in, and even though we know, like, by the end of the most recent one that they have, like, this kind of romantic connection, they still haven't acted on it in any way. And it, I don't know, I just kind of like the way that they didn't just shoehorn it in to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Yeah. What about the brother? One other thing we didn't touch on. We didn't talk at all about Cliff Curtis playing
Hobbs'
brother. Cliff Curtis with like dreadlocks.
Of Die Hard 4. That's our second Die Hard 4 reference.
Also, he was in, I think he was in Westworld as well, right? Isn't he?
Not that I know of.
No.
Are you thinking of Clifton Collins?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Clifton Collins.
They both have double C names.
Yeah, that's right. So, Cliff Curtis, one of that guy, he's in Training Day. I think that's right. Sunshine as well. So Runaway Jury, nice. So yeah, he's kind of like Tej, where he's just like the super equipment genius.
Yeah. We're like, oh, he's a great mechanic. He'll fix this like bioweapon machine.
I like his 3D printer. That seems very handy.
Yeah, it's good to have one of those.
Yeah, just good to have that laying around.
Don't have any guns, but we got this 3D printer.
Right. It's good that they were able to patch up their differences.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's that again also to me seemed a little bit forced, just the idea that he hasn't been there in 25 years. Like, you're this great guy who's a great family man, and
hey, everybody's got a dark past.
Yeah, it's not dark though. They immediately make up. All you had to do was meet some like world-class killers to your mom's house.
Right, exactly. Eat some of her. I think they're eating her food as well. But you know what? Happily ever after for them. Yeah. The Simone family is all back together. They've defeated, at least for the time being, they've defeated Brixton and Etienne and Hobbs and Shaw.
I'm going to complain about one more thing.
Yes, go ahead.
Just in the final fight, when they have to like vocalize their partnership, right? Of like, oh, I'm going to have your back and you've got mine. We're partners now. Like, you don't have to say that stuff. You can just show them doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know that they're partners now. You don't have to have them bro out for a minute before they like go fight him for the last, you know, few moments.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, this movie is like, they just kind of want to make sure you're not missing anything.
You can't miss it. You can't miss it.
I mean, this is just remember where we started with this franchise.
I know.
Where we DVDs, are, right? DVDs. We're not talking about Mission Impossible here. We're talking about these are fun. Don't think too hard about them.
Okay.
So we got our mid-credit scene, which has Ryan Reynolds back spoiling the Game of Thrones ending.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun where he's like, oh, I think I've been shot. And he's like, oh, this is somebody else's blood. I'm fine.
Yeah. Just, he's doing his whole death scene and then realizes.
And then, of course, the post-credit scene, which is at the very end of this movie, we see Shaw get arrested. They're arresting Hugh Janus. So nice callback to the making fun of their names.
Yep.
All right. Anything else? This has been a marathon podcast. Anything else on these two movies before we get into MVP, best cars, rankings, predictions for F9, any of that stuff?
No, let's move on.
All right. Oh, I did have one other thing. I saw there was a tweet going around before F9 came out, and I saved it because I wanted to talk about it on this podcast. And it was name your top five Fast and Furious characters.
Oh. Okay.
So I can go first because I need to look up what I responded to this. So I actually need a second. But I think that I can find it very quickly. There we go. All right. So I said Number five, Ramsey. This was before I rewatched 8 and Hobbs and Shaw, so it might switch. I might switch Ramsey out, but I just like the Ramsey. I like what she brings
to the movie. Okay.
Not much. Number four, Deckard Shaw.
Uh-huh.
Number three, Tej.
Yeah.
Number two, the biggest riser on this rewatch, that is Roman.
Yeah, I knew you'd have him on there.
Yeah, number one. Who do you think I got number one?
You got Hobbs on.
Hobbs, number one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who I would have on mine. Like, this, I would have Tej. I enjoy mm-hmm. Tej. I would put Dom on there. I'm going to put Dom on mine. Mm-hmm. I don't know about order, but I would probably put Deckard Shaw on there also. Mm-hmm. Who else we got?
I felt bad not having Brian.
I know. And I'm tempted to do that just because I feel like he was like he gets like the most improved award. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's put Brian on there. And then number one, I'm just going to put Shea Whigham.
Yeah. No Jesse.
But maybe no Jesse. Shea Whigham. Yeah.
I think I would probably swap Ramsey with Hattie Shaw.
Yeah,
after watching this, I think she's better.
She would probably go on mine too.
Ramsey, I like that Ramsey is just like not what you would expect from that character, right? But she surely doesn't do anything in Fast 8, so maybe she's back in 9.
Yeah.
And I feel like everybody had a Han on their list that was tweeting this link out, just because he's like the internet hero.
I do enjoy Han, but I just got to be a little contrarian and not go with the internet on this one.
All right, well, this leads us right into our MVPs for each movie. So I will read off the MVPs that we've had so far. So for movie one, I had Jesse. You had Dom. You had in movie two, you had Monica. That is Eva Mendes. I had Roman.
Yeah.
Movie number three. I'm not saying the titles. I'm just saying the numbers. No, movie three, you had Han. Justice for Han. Mm-hmm. I had Twinkie, which was the Bow Wow character. In movie number four, I had Brian, and you had the Shea Whigham character. Fast 5.
I should have meant that at some point, but I'm not going to.
Yeah. In Fast 5, you had Hobbs, and I had Han.
Fast
6, you had Tej, and I had Dom. So you taking Hobbs, me taking Dom, even though it's flipping our
opinions. We're not so different, you and I.
Yeah. And then in Furious 7, you had Brian, and I had Deckard Shaw.
Okay.
So movie number 8, you get to go first with your MVP for that movie.
All right. And I know that I spent probably about 30 minutes complaining about the way his character was treated, but I'm still going to go with Deckard Shaw because he's really fun in the movie. And like I said, if you just take that movie on its own, you don't have to worry about the fact that he killed one of my previous MVPs. So in that movie alone, I'm going with Deck. Going with Jason Statham. Which, by the way, you have not yet commented on my virtual background, which I know people can't see, but
I couldn't tell what it is. Something in a Speedo.
It's Jason Statham when he was on like the British diving team career. If you just Google Jason Statham diving and you get to watch him as a diver. When he had hair and was a professional diver.
I couldn't see him. I can't see the top of his head. It cuts off at like his forehead, which is
I should have picked a better photo. Sorry.
I'm tempted to go with you on this one, with Deckard Shaw. We've never had the same MVP for a movie, but I
do it also think be a repeat for you.
It'd be what?
A repeat. He'd be back to back.
It's MVP. True. Back to back movies for me. You know, and I can't go with Scott Eastwood in good faith in this movie. And I just think like Cypher, like I liked Charlize Theron in the role, but I don't think like Cypher was that great. So
no, and that's a problem we didn't really talk about either, which is like Charlize Theron is awesome. Like mm-hmm. she's a really good actress and she's really good in action movies. She's great in Fury Road, obviously. Like she's just all around great. And her character, not that interesting to me. Yeah. So
yeah, she's a hacker. That's fun. Like she's got
like Idris Elba in this one. Like you get this awesome actor to play the villain, and it's, you know, you don't quite utilize them to their potential.
Yeah, it's almost like it's not just a Marvel that has a villain problem. It's like all these blockbusters do.
Yeah.
That could be a whole podcast. Why do these blockbusters have villain problems?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I'm just going to keep it simple. So Deckard, he's racking up the MVP points tonight. So
wow, yeah.
We'll see if he gets back to back in the next movie. So Hobbs and Shaw. I will go first this time. So
are we going to have like a series MVP at the end?
I think after the next one, I'll total them up and we'll see who. Okay. But I'm not doing it right now. So I'm taking Hobbs for Hobbs versus, or Hobbs and Shaw.
For Hobbs and Shaw? Okay, I'm going to take Vanessa Kirby.
Yeah, Hattie. All right.
Yeah.
So the Shaws are racking up points.
The Shaws, yeah, that family is just
I do think, just looking, I'm pretty sure Deckard is the MVP, but we'll see after nine. Dom has two. Han has two. Hobbs has two. Deckard has three.
Yeah, but we could also choose our series MVP in terms of, like, it may not be someone that has won a single movie MVP, but is the most consistent throughout the series, you know?
Yeah, true. All right, now this is always the hardest one. So your favorite car from the movie, from Fate of the Furious.
Okay. So this one was tough because there was two that I thought were pretty cool. I think I'm going to have to go with the Charger, the Ice Charger.
Is that what Dom drives at the end of the movie? That's what
Dom drives at the end, where it's a Charger that has been, you know, retrofitted a little bit to like drive on the ice. And it's got it's the way he's got the EMP mounted in the back looks a lot like Mad Max's car in Road Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a very Mad Max vibe to it. And I thought that was just kind of cool. And I like the fact that it's not just a, you know, a car off the assembly line. Like, this is something that he has modified for this mission. And
much like the car that he modifies at the beginning of the movie as well, with the pop tab.
Yep. Yeah. So I'll tell you what my runner up was after you go with what yours was.
Mine's going to be, I don't even know what kind of car it was, but it's whatever Tej was driving on the ice. That like sport utility vehicle that he has with the, he's got the harpoon on it. And it's just like, it seems like if you're going to be driving on the ice, like that's probably the car you want. That's going to give you the most traction. And
yeah.
I really liked what Roman drives, but it just didn't, it wasn't practical.
His Murcielago. Yeah. His orange Murcielago, where he just made himself a target. So my runner up was the, I think I would go with the Plymouth GTX that, Dom is driving in the grappling scene, right? When he's in New York, when all the rest of the family is like trying to stop him. It's really sharp looking, and apparently, at least according to the fandom wiki, it's the fastest car in the series.
Interesting.
I think it said it was like 269 miles per hour or something, but yeah, and it's just cool looking. But
I do like that, and I think rip the doors off of it. Is that what happens?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's a shame. All right, and then for Hobbs and Shaw, I will go first, and I really like the tow truck at the end. But I think I am going to take Brixton's motorcycle.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I like how it can go under, like it can go sideways. It's like a transformer kind of. I think it even sounds like a transformer.
I forgot to mention this. No, there's a transformer sound effect that happens twice in the final battle, and it's from the helicopter. It's when they're going fishing, right? And they're trying to bring the helicopter down.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to rewind it and check, and I'm like 99.9% sure it's literally just the Transformers noise.
Probably.
And they play it twice. So for me, there's not as many to choose from in this movie, obviously. And I thought that I thought Deckard's McLaren was cool, but a little too flashy. So I decided I'm just gonna go with Hobbs's Ford Bronco that he's driving at the beginning.
Yes.
Just his, like, it is very him, you know. He likes his giant vehicles, but I like the fact that he's driving a 1981 Bronco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that definitely fits the character.
Yeah.
And everybody likes a white Ford Bronco, right? Or a tan Ford Bronco.
Yeah, it wasn't white, but yeah, probably still a escape vehicle.
All right. We've talked a lot about Bond connections. Is there anything Bond-wise that we didn't mention that you want to make sure we talk about?
There definitely is, and I can't remember what it is right now.
Was Helen Mirren never in it? She was never in any Bond.
No, right? She hasn't been, which is kind of amazing. I can't think of. I know there was something from 8 that obviously we talked a lot about Skyfall with Hobbs and Shaw. And I do remember there was another connection with 8 that I'm not bringing to mind right now because I didn't take any notes. But
you'll remember it as soon as
I'll remember it. Yep. And then I'll text it to you and we'll talk about it for the next one.
Well, I'll put it in my notes for the next one. Yeah. All right. Second to last thing. So we have one more thing to do for this one. Decision making time. So your current rankings are from bottom to top, 3, 1, 2, 4, 7, 6, and 5 at the top. So where do you slot Fate of the Furious and Hobbs and Shaw?
Okay. This is tough. I forgot we were doing this. Okay. So, all right. I'm still going to put 3 at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I had 1 next, right?
Yep.
What did I have after that?
2.
2, yep, 2. Then 4. Mm-hmm. 4. Then I think after that, after 4, I feel like I'm going to put Hobbs and Shaw.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. I know
Rock wearing thin for you.
I feel like cuz I mean, as we've been talking about it, I feel like we've been very positive towards it, but
that's the Rock's brand.
It might be, yeah, it might be a situation similar to when we talked about 6 and 7, where the more we talked about it, the more I liked 7.
Mm-hmm.
But in the moment, like Hobbs and Shaw, I enjoyed the idea of it more than I did the actual movie. Right. And I liked a lot of the banter and the repartee and the kind of combo of those two guys. But for whatever reason, like it never fully gelled to me. And like mm-hmm. I said, I was with it for like probably the first 2/3, and then I just kind of I thought it lost steam for me, and so I bumped it down. Like I was like, I knew it had a bad reputation. Like I didn't know
I don't think it has a bad reputation. I'm not sure what the the Rotten Tomatoes or your cinema score is for it, but I feel like most people were pleasantly surprised by Hobbs and Shaw.
Okay, because what I had seen recently by accident was people just like almost kind of apologizing for liking it. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I liked Hobbs and Shaw. It's, you know, no big deal. Don't at me kind of thing. As if there was a reaction to it, but,
Metacritic 60 out of 100.
Okay.
Cinema score A-.
Cinema score is a little, yeah, that's, yeah.
And then 67 on Rotten Tomatoes.
So. And that all seems fairly like that seems right in line to what I would say. Mm-hmm. To me those seem spot on. I just remember thinking like halfway through, like, oh man, I think I like this movie a lot more than most other people just because of the reputation that at least I thought it had. But then by the end, I'm like, okay, this is like, it's not living up to the beginning. So that's why I put it there. Then I would go 8.
Okay. Yep.
Then 7, 6, 5.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Okay.
Yep. So your new rankings, Tokyo Drift, mm-hmm. The Fast and the Furious.
Yep.
Too Fast, Too Furious, Fast and Furious, Hobbs and Shaw, kind of Hobbs and Shaw splitting your list right in half.
Yeah.
Then the 4 most recent in the main franchise, Fate of the Furious, Furious 7, Fast and Furious 6, and Fast 5, your number 1.
Okay, so each one has gotten slightly worse since the 5th one for me, except, you know, not counting the spinoff.
Yeah, you have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then 4, 2, 1, 3.
And I will say it's really, like, hard for me to, like, decide between that grouping of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how I was with Bond.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to remember, like, what happens in what, and, like, it's more for me, I have to think about, like, what are the, like, things, especially for Bond, especially, like, what were the things that really stuck out that made me, like, what was memorable about that movie. So maybe the movie itself might have been better, but like there's some like memorable scene that I really like.
Like who's the villain, what's the setting, like that kind of thing. And to me, like as I was looking at these, and you know, I haven't been ranking them on Letterboxd until after we've spoken, but like for me, 6, 7, and 8 are all like 3-star movies for me if I'm going to rank them on Letterboxd, right? So they're all like neck and neck.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't.
I think someday you should rewatch 7, because 7 is better than you give it. Like, there's probably, I'm sure there's a Bond movie that, like, I don't give, maybe it's, probably one of the Roger Moore ones. Like the Spy, not the Spy Who Loved Me, that,
Circus. Fear Eyes Only, maybe?
Yeah, Fear Eyes Only. Like, I have that one low.
Or the Circus one is Octopussy.
And Octopussy also. Like, some of the Roger Moore ones, I just, like, watch those, and, like, they all kind of blend together for me, and then we didn't talk about it for a really long time. So it's like, some of those, I just kind of, like, I have them ranked just like in the glob in the middle, and like those are ones that, like, someday would be good to revisit, and maybe I'd like them more. Same with like Dr. No, I think, is another one. So
I'm sure, yeah, and I'm sure my rankings would change if I watch them again. And also, they're super arbitrary right now, just because, like I said, the last three of the main series have all been fairly even for me. So to me, it's like the fifth one at the top, and then all the ones since then have been about the same.
All right, so I have my rankings as well. Mine, we're differing now. We're getting to different territory. So I, bottom, I have the same bottom four as you, 3, 1, 2, 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, then my next one after four in the 1, 2, 3, in the fifth position is Fate of the Furious.
Okay.
I didn't really like this one in the theater. I liked it a little bit better on the rewatch, but the next one I have is Fast 6. And the reason why I have 6 and 8 together is because I really feel like 6 and 8 are the same movie and 6 and 8 first.
Yeah, like, right.
The stuff I like about 8 is the Shaw stuff. I love with the stuff with the baby. And I like, you know, some of what we're getting, but 6 just is more more cohesive to me. Then after 6, in the third position, I have Hobbs and Shaw, which is where I had it after I saw it. I just really like Hobbs and Shaw. I think it's super fun.
Yeah.
And I like, I mean, they're just giving The Rock a chance to work on his brand, and I enjoy The Rock's brand. And then staying in my number two position is Fast 5, which is very close to Furious 7, which is my number one.
So there you go.
There's a tier, first two, then a drop off, then Hobbs and Shaw, then a drop off, 6 and 8, then a drop off, 4, 2, 1, 3. So I'd rank them. Oh my God, we are just talking forever, but we have one movie left. Mac,
one more,
and neither of us have seen it. This is a first watch for both of us.
Yeah,
that everybody else has seen. There's people have already podcasted about this. People have moved on to Black Widow.
SEO is just really, really off.
It'll be there when people do the rewatch when it comes out on Peacock and Blu-ray. but F9. So we both know a little bit about it. We've both kind of seen some spoilers. I know it's been doing very well in the box office, which is exciting. Is there anything that you have a prediction for that's like not something that you like, a prediction that you have not seen anywhere?
I don't know. I feel like, I think we said before, like, I have a feeling we're going to get some kind of Han closure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because, like, even before I watched these movies, I knew that that was an issue with the fan base. So maybe they're going to address that. But other than that, like, I feel like even you saying earlier that you didn't think The Rock was in it, like, I had no idea The Rock wasn't going to be in it. So I don't really know what to expect. I feel like we're going to get Cypher back, but
I just don't think The Rock is in it, because I think we would have seen him doing press for this movie. And like, he hasn't been, like, I follow him on Instagram and he's just tweeting about Black, or like Instagram about Black Adam and nothing about this series. So
him recently is Jungle Cruise.
Yes. Jungle Cruise also coming out in a couple weeks. I think the big thing I will guess, because I know John Cena's in it, and also like they're replacing their one wrestler with a different wrestler. Right.
And I do know who John Cena plays, which
is I do too. So
hilarious to me.
I do not understand how he's going to be Dom's brother, but somehow he is. And I'm assuming he's the villain of this movie, but by the end of the movie, they'll be working together. Like, he'll be back.
Because they're family.
Right. He'll be at the barbecue at the end of the movie. That's my prediction. John Cena will be at the barbecue at the end of F9.
Oh, the other thing that I was trying to, I don't always do this because I don't care enough about most movies, I guess. But like, the fact that we're talking about these, you know, on a podcast, I was trying to remain unbiased about like my opinions of them. So I was trying to avoid like Rotten Tomato scores and things like that. And
it's easier to do with the Bond movies, but
Yeah. I did happen to see the Rotten Tomato score for F9 about 30 minutes before we started recording. I had avoided it so far, but I ended up accidentally seeing it. So,
I mean, I haven't seen the Rotten Tomato score, but I've seen people's Letterboxd scores, and then it's just kind of. I take it with a grain of salt because the way I feel about this franchise is, you know, I don't think there's that many people that have 7 as their number one. Most people, the consensus is 5 is the number one. So
right. But Rotten Tomatoes would disagree with you there, I think.
I think the Rotten Tomatoes score for 7
is much higher than 5.
Let's see. Why not check that? Furious 7, Rotten Tomatoes.
I feel like 7 maybe has the highest, but...
And Fast 5, Rotten Tomatoes... My computer knows it's super late and it's taking forever. We'll see when this comes together. While that's loading, Mac, anything else that you want to say? I think this is going to be our longest by far, all of these podcasts, although we have to edit out some stuff, so maybe not. Anything else you want to talk about?
Not really. I mean, you know,
when are you going to go see F9? What's your plan?
Well, I mean, we got one last ride. I don't know. So I'm maybe tomorrow. Might try and go tomorrow, which is technically now today.
yeah, it is.
If not, sometime in the next 3 to 4 days, I'm gonna try and get back with my family.
Yeah, there you go. I am also gonna try to go not tomorrow, maybe Friday, maybe Saturday. I think we'll be back to do a podcast sooner rather than later. We only have one movie to talk about, and we're not gonna have notes really for this one because I'm not taking notes in the movie theater. So,
I'm gonna have my phone on flashlight mode.
There you go.
Writing in a steno pad.
Yeah, 82% for Furious 7.
There you go. And
77% for Fast 5.
Okay, not that far off. Not that far off.
I think Rotten Tomatoes' website is down because it just spun, but there was a Google result that had the numbers in there.
There you go.
All right. Well, follow Mac if you're not at Jack Monson.
Yep.
And we'll be back with another movie ladder as well next week. I cannot yet say what we're watching, but things will be falling from the sky in the movie that we're watching next week for movie ladder.
What was the last one you watched? Edge of Tomorrow?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Okay.
The next movie is about as long as this podcast. I will also say that. That should be a good hint.
Oh, I think I figured it out.
on Friday we will announce it, but it is only Thursday morning right now, so and this podcast will be coming out sometime on Thursday when I get around to editing it. So thank you again for riding along with us on this one. We've reached the end of this endless runway, this endless stretch of ice, but we'll be back for F9, and then we gotta start thinking about what we're doing next after we've done Bond, we've done Fast and Furious. We gotta think about what franchise we're gonna attack a quarter mile at a time next.
Boss Baby.
Yes, Boss Baby, or the Fear Street. Those Fear Street
movies. Fear Street came out too. Boss Baby. Okay.
Something. Boss Baby might be fun. Toy Story. We can get your daughter on.
Oh, I've seen those recently.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll figure it out. So yeah. All right. Thanks for listening to this extra long Fast Furious recap. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed this series. I guess Hobbs and Shaw, or Fate of the Furious, depending on which team you're on. All right, we'll see you guys next time.
Later.
You're really good. So
Hobbs and Shaw is almost over on my team.
Oh my god, we almost got through both movies. Now you just gotta watch the end.
Yeah. All right, they're in Samoa at least, but.
All right, that's, I'm gonna edit that in. That's gonna be how we're gonna end this. Hobbs and Shaw is almost on your TV. So.
All right, later.
All right, see ya. I done been around the world, ain't nobody else that could do it like us with nobody help. When the chips about to fall and I back